DC Comics Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how are you?
I'm doing great today, Adam. We are 44 days away from the Batcat wedding as of this episode being recorded. So I am so excited.
You just
excited
couldn't wait. That. You went right into that. No. Just...
Well, I always start the episode off with our Batcat.
Yeah, I know, but usually there's a preamble to it. Now you're getting so excited that you're just rushing into everything. It's good.
That helps answer how I'm doing today, because I'm doing well because we're getting closer and closer.
Your mood is entirely based on how many days are left to the Batman Catwoman wedding. I would see a psychiatrist.
That's a lot to do with it.
I would see a psychiatrist for that, sir. But that's a whole other podcast. I told you I'm trying to get a psychiatrist on here so she can help us out with what exactly is going on with you. But we'll figure that out later. But we're doing actually another one of your favorites, a Smallville episode today.
Yes, so indeed.
That'd be another
Somebody
reason why.
Say
yeah, okay, don't sing, please. Our audiences have requested that you please not sing, so I'm going to... Well, they haven't, but I have, so I'll just pass that along. To do that, we're doing season 3 for those keeping track at home. To do that, we've enlisted some help. Who do we have here, Jordan?
Yeah, well, we have Ricky Church coming in from Batman on Film and Flickering Myth. He's going to come join us and talk about Smallville with us. So we're really happy to have you here, Ricky. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, guys, and thanks for having me on. Excited for the talk.
Yeah, it should be fun. And by the way, we did not PSA, we did not force him into season 3. He was given the option to choose. So for anybody wondering, I just want to clarify that. It was his choice, so just...
Hey, season 3 is great. Why would
I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying I just want to clarify that he chose, right?
Yeah.
I just want to point that out so that everybody's, you know, we're not torturing people or, you know, tying people to chairs to choose certain seasons or whatnot. It's freedom of choice of this podcast. So there we go. Before we get into the review, let's talk about, we got some news apparently, a lot of news actually. So let's get started on that. Jordan, what we got?
This week was a crazy news week, and all of the news was good except for one piece of news, and so I guess we'll have to start with the unfortunate piece of news, and then mm-hmm. we can do the happier news later, which mm-hmm. unfortunately, and it relates to Smallville, because unfortunately Smallville's Bridget Crosby, and of course also Lois Lane in the 4 Christopher Reeve Superman movies, Margot Kidder, passed away last Sunday, so... Well, we're recording this on Monday, so 8 days ago as of our recording this. Yeah. I just thought we'd take a minute to remember her and talk about her since, unfortunately, some unfortunate news there.
Ricky, any thoughts on Margot Kidder? Memories
just
you want
that,
to share or anything?
Yeah, just that it obviously sucks a lot. Like, she's... She's a Lois Lane that a lot of people like remember and first think of when they think of Superman, just because of the impact of those old movies. And then, of course, as Jordan said, she's kind of remained in parts within the Superman world, like with her few guest appearances on Smallville and stuff like that. So it definitely sucks that she's gone. Unfortunate news.
Yeah, from my perspective, I mean, she wasn't the sort of, you know how people, when they grow up with a certain Lois Lane, they refer to them as my Lois Lane or my Superman.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't grow up with her as Lois, because my first iteration of Superman that I watched sort of like live, if you will, I guess you could say, is Lois and Clark. So
yeah, Terry Hatcher, right. Yeah, for sure.
But even still, like, you know, having rewatched, you know, the classic Christopher Reeve movies, so even though she's not my Lois Lane, she has left a indelible mark on the Superman legacy. And she's been a big part of this world. And again, her, her appearances on Smallville. And it's just a shame. Hopefully there's, there, there's some way that she's, you know, she's met up with Christopher Reeve in the afterlife, and it's a shame that she's gone, and she'll be forever remembered as Lois Lane. Jordan?
Yeah, absolutely. I echo what both of you guys said. She wasn't my Lois Lane either, but I definitely appreciate her contribution to the mythos in that way. And I mean, she really is an iconic part of the Superman legacy. And you know, it's really sad to see that she passed. I apparently she died in her sleep. So as Andy pointed out in Holy Batcast, I mean, that's at least somewhat comforting that, you know, if you're going to go out anyway, that's a way to go out. Yeah, just really unfortunate news. I loved her as Bridget Crosby on Smallville, which we'll talk about on our next Smallville retrospective in season four. But yeah, really, really sad news there.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what's next? Let's see if we can brighten the mood here. Let's get things.
Well, this piece of news certainly brightened the mood for me, because this was something that I was so worried about for quite a while. But fortunately, Gotham is coming back for season five. Unfortunately, it is only going to be a 13 episode order, and it's going to be the final season. So that's unfortunate. But there was a time when I didn't think we were going to get a final season, period. And we got this amazing news that Gotham is coming back for season five, which means they will get to wrap up the story. It's going to focus heavily on Bruce Wayne's journey into Batman, which obviously we've seen more so in season two to season four, as they focused more on that since season one. But this is really going to dive into that. Obviously, they're adapting No Man's Land, which we saw set up in the season four finale. So that's really exciting. I guess, you know, I was going to wait to talk about this news later, but I'm going to tie it into this news because they're very much related. We also found out what new villains anyway, are going to be appearing in season five of Gotham. So I'm going to go ahead and reveal those now.
Okay.
This is from a TV Guide article, an interview with John Stevens that came out right after the season four finale premiered. And here's who we've got coming into season five of Gotham. The Ventriloquist, and presumably Scarface too, although it doesn't mention Scarface, but presumably.
Well, usually they go hand in hand, so I'd assume.
Mm-hmm. Hey, well, maybe it'll be like from the Batman where he had that replacement Scarface thing.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to pull it off, but usually they go hand in hand.
Yeah, so of course. I think it's a safe bet that they'll adapt Scarface. I was just joking about that. But then we've got Mother is going to be a villain in this, and I think that's amazing because I don't know if you guys read the Batman and Robin Eternal maxi series that came out a couple years ago. It ran for like 6 months weekly, but it was amazing, really focusing in on the Robins. I think somebody on the most recent BOF podcast was talking about how there isn't any comic books that are focused, that it would be great to have a comic book focused just on the Robins. And one thing I don't know if they were who, I can't remember who mentioned on the most recent BOF podcast, but this would be my answer to that, is that Batman and Robin Eternal mini maxi series, really it was. It was like 26 issues, and it focused on the Robins because it was during the time when Bruce had lost his memory and everything. And it focused on the Robins, and they were taking on Mother, who was this really creepy villain who was just amazing, I thought, in that maxi series. So it's awesome to see her getting adapted in another medium outside of the comic. So that's awesome. We're getting Orphan, which is really cool, too, because obviously in the comics, Cassandra Cain played very heavily into No Man's Land. And now somehow, I mean, obviously in the comics, Cassandra's a lot younger than Bruce, so it looks like they're changing that. But I'm really excited to see what they do with Orphan. And then also Lady Shiva is going to be on Gotham Season 5. So that's what we can expect from Gotham Season 5. I'll just go ahead and say I am so excited for this. I love Gotham. It's my favorite show currently on the air. I love the show, and I'm so happy that even though it is going to be the last season, and that's sort of bittersweet, I'm happy that it's going to really get to – they're going to get to wrap it up the way they want to wrap it up, and I'm so excited to see what they do in season five.
Ricky, thoughts on all this?
I'm just happy it's the last season.
I take it you're not a fan.
No, I'm not a big – fan of it. I reviewed the first two seasons for BOF, and after that point, I just couldn't really stick with it. It was too...
It wasn't your cup of tea.
Yeah. Two clashes of tone too many times, and yeah, so I'll just leave it at that.
Fair enough. I'll say I enjoy it for what it is, and basically I've always looked at Gotham as, I find it best to look at it as an Elseworlds, so that if anything is out of whack, mm-hmm. you just take it for what it is and leave it there. But I mean Lady Shiva, stuff like that is, it'll be interesting to see how they adapt her and what they do with all that, and those kind of characters. I am glad that it is getting one season to at least wrap it up as the producers intended, because I'm going through that with another show that I enjoyed, which was Lucifer. They got canceled after a cliffhanger, and in typical Fox fashion, they've pissed me off because now I'm not going to know how that wraps up. So I'm glad.
As Fox does a lot.
Oh yeah, they're. I think I'm trying to figure it out. Let's see. They canceled Firefly. They canceled the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which I was into at the time. Mm-hmm. And now Lucifer. So there are three strikes. You're out. So as soon as Gotham wraps up its run, I think I'm officially done with Fox. But
well, it's a good thing. Black Lightning was almost on Fox, and I'm glad it wasn't, because I would be.
Oh, I would have been canceled after three episodes.
Oh yeah, without question.
So I'm glad that Gotham's getting a chance to go out on its own terms. Let's see how they wrap it up. I have a finale idea in mind of how they're going to do it, but I'll save that for our Gotham season 4 wrap up show.
I'll say, Adam, I think there's a very good chance, because we've gotten Superman on Supergirl last year, I think there's a very good chance they let them use David Mazouz in the Batman costume for a full episode in the finale. And I think
but I just don't think we'll see it full on. I think it's going to be very Smallville-esque.
I've always thought the same thing, that Gotham would end with like just a shot of Bruce, like, I don't know, leaping off the rooftop, and there's the bat silhouette or something like that.
Essentially what I thought of, and they kind of did it in the season 4 finale, spoilers. I pictured it as, you're going to see him and Gordon on the rooftop. It's the bat signal is going to be on the roof as well. You're going to see Gordon's face, and you're going to see basically Batman from behind. So you'll see the cowl and the cape, but you won't actually see him full on. And Gordon will do the whole thing with, you know, maybe the Joker card, something similar to the Joker card idea. And then he'll jump off the roof, and then fade to black, and that'll be it. So there it is.
You see, I think that I had no problem with the way Smallville ended, but I know a lot of people did, and I think that the Gotham producers are likely aware of the criticisms to the end of Smallville. So I actually think that that's why I think that they will give us a full episode of Bruce's Batman.
We'll have to wait and see, but
we will. We will.
We'll take bets on that later on as season 5 progresses.
But very exciting news, right?
Yeah, I'm done with it. Let's see how it ends. Let's go.
At least for the two of us.
Yeah, but it won't bother Ricky because he won't watch. So all in all, it's everybody walks away happy, right? So it's good.
Yeah. I might watch the rest of the series once it all hits Netflix.
Or you might just jump into the finale at the very least, just to see what you actually do. There's that. But yeah.
Did either of you guys read Batman and Robin Eternal?
No, I haven't.
I didn't, only because, not because I wasn't interested, but I got burned out on weekly series with, 52? Which was an extreme, at least on my part, waste of money. So I was like, weeklies, unless it's like 6 to 12 issues, I ain't doing it. So and that was...
Well, I would say check that, now that it's all collected, check that out.
I might do it in trade form, you know, through Comixology or whatever, but yeah.
It's excellent, and like, that'll give you some reference for Mother when they bring her in season 5, because she is such a great villain, I think.
All right, I'll keep that recommendation in mind. It's very rare that you recommend comics, because you read two of them.
I read more than two.
Well, that's debatable.
I read Batman. I read Justice League. I'm gonna be reading Catwoman when that debuts. Yeah. I read Batman: Sins of the Father, and I read Injustice 2, and I'm gonna be reading the Prelude to the Wedding issues too for Batman. Yeah. So,
Of course,
that's a hell of a lot more than two, Adam.
Well, six, but whatever. But So, and two of those I won't be reading, so you can keep me up to date on those. What's next on the news front?
Next up is more TV news, which is that I'll just go ahead and say we've got two new DC TV series that have been announced this week. The first of which is a Doom Patrol series is going to be spinning out of Titans. And we have a description for it. First of all, executive producing will be Greg Berlanti, Jeff Johns, Jeremy Carver, and Sarah Schechter. And here's the description we've got of this series. Based on DC characters originally written and drawn by Arnold Drake, Bob Haney, and Bruno Premiani, Doom Patrol is a reimagining of one of DC's most beloved groups of outcast superheroes, Robot Man, Negative Man, Elastigirl, and Crazy Jane, led by modern-day mad scientist Dr. Niles Calder, the Chief. The Doom Patrol's members each suffered horrible accidents that gave them superhuman abilities, but also left them scarred and disfigured. Traumatized and downtrodden, the team found purpose through the Chief, who brought them together to investigate the weirdest phenomena in existence, and to protect Earth from what they find. Part support group, part superhero team, the Doom Patrol is a band of superpowered freaks who fight for a world that wants nothing to do with them. Picking up after the events of Titans, Doom Patrol will find these reluctant heroes in a place they never expected to be, called to action by none other than Cyborg, who comes to them with a mission hard to refuse, but with a warning that is hard to ignore. Their lives will never, ever be the same. So, first of all, I guess I'll just go ahead and say I am very excited about this. It gives me hope that they were impressed, because obviously the Doom Patrol, as they said here in this synopsis, they're being introduced in Titans, and I believe episode 5, which is titled Doom Patrol. And so it gives me hope that maybe they were really impressed with what the Doom Patrol did in that episode, and they were like, you know, we need to give them their own series. I was first introduced to the Doom Patrol on the original Teen Titans animated series, and I really loved what they did with them there. So that has me very excited. Out of the characters appearing in this, all of them were ones that have already been cast for Titans, except for Crazy Jane. So presumably she'll be getting cast soon. The fact that we're getting, first of all, I'll just say it's cool that they're expanding the Titans universe. We still don't know what universe Titans itself is in. I'm still hoping, and I still think there's a good shot that it'll be on some Earth in the Arrowverse. I'm holding out hope for that because of Berlanti's involvement. But if it's not, or if it is, it's cool to see that universe getting expanded with the Doom Patrol, and perhaps even Swamp Thing will be in this universe. We don't know. The fact that Cyborg is going to be in this, the first thing that came to mind is, man, are they actually, instead of putting in the Arrowverse or its own universe, are they going to set this in the DCEU and have Ray Fisher show up? I don't think that's that likely. I do think there's a possibility. No,
because I think there was a casting breakdown, so I don't think that's the case.
Oh, was there for Cyborg? Yeah, okay, yeah. I did not see that. Yeah. In that case, though, then the other thing that it made me think of is if it's not that, which it sounds like it's not, that it could be a case where, I mean, this is another thing that makes me think that WB is getting over their mandates about characters appearing multiple places in live action at once. I already thought they'd gotten over that with Superman on Supergirl. Then I started to think maybe not with Deathstroke, now that Arrow can't use Deathstroke anymore. Again, I already pointed out the thing with Gotham before, that I do think there's a good chance we see Bruce, at least for one episode in this, in the season finale as Batman. So maybe that's another thing here where Cyborg will just be in one episode. So then WB was like, okay, you can have an exception with that. I don't know. But I am excited to see him regardless of what the case is. I just think this is awesome news that we're getting another thing in the Titans universe. And another thing on the DC Universe streaming service. So I'm very excited about this show. What about you guys?
Yeah, Ricky, what are your thoughts on the Doom Patrol?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it because, as the description says, they're like a weird bunch of superheroes that haven't really been adapted, at least in live action, before. You've seen them in various like cartoons, but... never in live action, and even in comics, like, they're not, at least in love comics that I've read, like Justice League's and whatever, that
they're not really
they haven't
present, yeah.
been utilized a whole lot. And last year I read the new Doom Patrol written by Jared Way from the Young Animals. And that was very wacky and out there and very much in line with like a Grant Morrison type of story. But yeah, it was really cool.
I'm 50-50 with Grant Morrison. So anything, it's like some of the stuff I love, some of the stuff I want nothing to do with. So that gets me interested, but also, you know, scared, because it's like, am I going to have a massive headache coming out of reading this? Like,
yeah, I don't think the show will veer like that way for obvious reasons, but I still expect it to be like kind of out there. Maybe, who knows, maybe it'll be have like a bit of a Guardians of the Galaxy type influence.
That's what I got from the description. It kind of felt like, all right, it's sort of DC's Guardians kind of thing.
Yeah, but it should be pretty cool. I'm kind of looking forward to checking that out.
I mean, from my perspective, I don't know much about the Doom Patrol, but there's one thing that has me exceedingly optimistic, and that's Jeff Johns being involved, because he is a treasure trove of understanding DC history and these characters. So if he's involved, then I'm my ears perk up. I'll say that.
Did you track down that issue of Batman the Brave and the Bold, the tie-in comic to the animated series that I
actually forgot that you mentioned it, but now that you mention it, I'm going to write it down as you're talking, so I'll keep that in mind.
Cool.
Chances are I was tuning you out that episode for some such reason, but I'll make a note of it now that you brought it up again. Another comic recommendation. Good job, by the way.
Thank you.
So I'm intrigued on that level. The cyborg thing is intriguing. I really hope that Warner Brothers has gotten over this ridiculous hang-up that they have about characters. Certain characters can appear on TV, certain characters can't. I mean, to me, the viewing audience isn't stupid. They'll know the difference between a movie and the movie continuity and a TV continuity. So that idea that of that respect is. I hope that's something that goes by the wayside. I don't believe for a second. I know they could say whatever they want. I don't believe for a second that we're actually going to get a cyborg movie. So having him here is a nice addition to the streaming service. And I hope, you know, if everything goes well, let's say Titans does well. You know, Doom Patrol goes well. If Titans gets a second season, it'd be nice to see Cyborg fully transition over there. But the fact that
it's curious that if they're going to allow them to use Cyborg, they wouldn't have put him on Titans. That he's really the glaring omission from that. But what that makes me think that maybe he's only going to be like a one episode thing in Doom Patrol. That he just launches them on their mission and then
right. Yeah, I don't think he's going to be a regular team member. I just think he's going to be a piece of connective tissue that, again, if Titans gets a second season, then I think he'll transition full-time over there, because that's the team that he's most associated with. And by the way, let's not go there. You know my feelings on that. I'm not going to talk about that.
Wait a minute. You don't like the Booyah line?
Well, anything.
I don't know your feelings on this.
Well, you know my feelings on Teen Titans Go. So anything that's.
Oh no, Booyah's Booyah's from the original series. Oh,
okay, then yeah, I'm fine. I'm okay. I just every time I think of Cyborg now, unfortunately, I mean, that Teen Titans Go is in my head.
I think he does say it on Teen Titans Go as well,
It's more ridiculous on Teen Titans Go if that's possible.
It started on the original series.
Yeah, I don't have anything against the line, because Ray Fisher said it and it was fine. And by the way, just for people listening, I have nothing against Ray Fisher or Cyborg being in the film universe. I just don't think that the character popped enough for Warner Brothers to say, yeah, we're going to give this guy, we're going to move forward with the solo film.
Which is unfortunate, because personally, I thought he was one of the highlights of
I agree.
Yeah, 100% I enjoyed him. I'm not saying I didn't enjoy him. I just don't think, in terms of a wider audience perspective, that he popped enough. But I will say that I do, for those people that, you know, prefer him in the movies, I will say I fully expect that if he will show up again in the movies, and I think it'll be in Flash. That's just my feeling, and I hope that comes to pass because I'm not.
Will they fist bump again?
Well, I don't know, but it'll be up to the two directors that they have on board. listen, I just want to make it clear that I'm not against. Look, if I'm wrong, and as soon as we hang up this podcast and stop recording, there's an announcement that so and so is going to direct the Cyborg movie. I'll stand up and applaud, but I just don't see that happening. But I have nothing against Cyborg appearing in movies or anything like that. So I just want to make that clear. But I'm happy to see him on the DC streaming service. The other thing I want to ask you guys, because I'm getting curious now, with all these shows, Swamp Thing and now Doom Patrol and Titans and Harley Quinn and outside, Young Justice Outsiders. How much? Let's have a little bit of a bet going. How much do you think this streaming service is going to set us back? What's your price point guess?
Oh, I don't know. I'd say anywhere between $10 and $20, maybe. Hopefully it'll be something like closer to what Netflix is, I guess. I don't know.
My thought is, well, they can't really start out of the gate charging Netflix prices.
Yeah.
So I'd say about $8 to $10 to start, and then they'll increase it as time goes on, is my guess. But what about you, Jordan? What do you think?
I'm thinking the same thing. I'm thinking at the most it'll be the same amount as Netflix.
Yeah, I think they would be really pushing it because – If you're trying to go more than Netflix, because you're already appealing to a niche audience where it's only DC, right? So I think you're asking a lot.
To me, if I had to choose between either Netflix or this, I'd obviously absolutely choose this. But it's like I don't know. I don't know if they can justify it to everybody that
it costs more than
Netflix, which has so much. I mean, Netflix has so much more content than this is likely going to have. So,
well, they have my money regardless. I just kind of right on and say it. Like my money, like as soon as they say here you can buy it, it's bought.
Yeah, same here.
So it's not a question of that for me, because I'm likely to fork over whatever they ask for, within reason. If they ask for $100 a month, then I'm gonna have problems. But anything else I can try and massage out and work it out, but yeah, it's just for me I have to wonder what it's going to be. I've been wondering about it for a couple of days now, so I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on that. But we'll move along from this piece of news. What else is there, Jordan?
Yeah. So coming up next is, and actually here's a segue, something else that I'm going to have to be paying for soon is Epics, because I do not have Epics, and there's a show called Pennyworth coming to FX that's going to be essentially an Alfred origin story that's going to deal with his time in 1960s London working with Thomas Wayne, and they're going to be working in a secret company, presumably something to do with Wayne Enterprises, I suppose. It's going to be developed by Bruno Heller. And also Danny Cannon's going to be involved, which has me very excited because I love what they've done with Gotham. So I'm excited to see them continue to play in the, in the Batman universe, presumably. Obviously, we know Gotham is ending next year. So presumably this will be another project that they'll be doing after that. And, we still get to see them tackle, the Batman universe, which is cool. It's going to be a 10-episode series, and yeah, like I said, it's going to be on Epix, which is a channel that I'd heard of, but I wasn't even sure if I had it or not, and when I looked it up, I do not, so I'm going to have to get that, I suppose. But yeah, this has me quite excited. I'm excited to see, some more backstory for Alfred here. I do wish that it was going to be set in the Gotham universe and star Sean Pertwee, because I love his Alfred. I'm sure they'll find somebody else that does a great Alfred. I mean, I'm confident in them. They've done a great job casting for Gotham, so I'm confident they'll do a great job casting here. And I'm just really excited to see what they do. It seems like we have so many DC TV shows on the air right now and coming soon And this seems like a really unique one in that landscape, you know, like none of, something like none of the others, which is really cool. And I'm excited to see another Batman-related live-action DC TV show, which obviously, since Batman's my favorite character, that that excites me quite a bit. How about you guys?
Ricky, thoughts?
Well, I'm looking forward to it simply, you know, like Jordan said, it is Batman related, so that kind of has my interest about it. And I definitely like Alfred is one of my favorite characters. I think he's kind of a undervalued character, at least to like people who only like have a vague or common knowledge of Batman. He's kind of undervalued. So a prequel series would definitely be interesting, especially if they, you know, go with the angle of like exploring his spy past. Like when I read this news, one story that came to my mind at first was the I don't know if you guys read All-Star Batman.
I did.
The Scott the last arc of that Scott Snyder wrote the First Ally. Like that story came to mind. It's like if they did something like that where they explore his past as a spy and soldier, then that would be pretty cool. Yeah,
you and I are on the same wavelength there, because I think, you know, the idea and you know, based on the description that I read in the news report, that it sounds like that's what they're going to explore, his spy past. So I thought, well, you know, between Batman Earth One, which Gotham sort of took inspiration from for their Alfred, the story you just mentioned, you know, we've kind of gotten this depiction of Alfred where he's more of a badass, where his past was where he's more of a badass, as opposed to just being the butler, or, you know, I mean, there's the father figure, but most people know him as the butler. Like when you
And that's also something even Batman the Animated Series established, that like even with his posh and polite attitude, like they confirmed in that series, oh no, he did work for the British government. Yeah. So.
And I would say that take on Alfred, which I think really the first time we really saw it was in Batman Earth One, but I think that we've seen that become quite prevalent in versions of Alfred recently. Their version of Alfred was very much that way. And of course, Jeremy Irons' Alfred is very much that take on Alfred.
Yeah, there's certainly a hint of that for sure in his portrayal. But so to me, exploring that, I think it could be fascinating, because it's something that aside from a couple of stories, they haven't really delved into deeply. So I think there's opportunity there. I like the period setting, the 60s, and sort of giving Alfred a bit of a James Bondish flavor is something that I'm interested in seeing. So I'm down for this for sure. And look, my because I know people are like, well, why do they have to have a Batman show without, you know, a Batman show without Batman, a Superman show without Superman? Look, here's my stance on it. If I like it, great, I'll keep watching. If I don't, I won't. And at worst, it kills time until the next live action Batman movie. So, you know, take it for what it is. And then, and like I said, if it's absolutely unwatchable, in my opinion, I won't watch it. But if it is, if it's decent and somewhat intriguing, then I'll stick with it. So that's my thoughts on the prequel series.
For me, it's like I sort of have a similar stance in that if it's good, it doesn't bother me that it's a prequel series. And frankly, all the prequel series they've done so far, Smallville, Gotham, Krypton, I've loved all three of those. So it's like, as long as this is awesome too. The fact that it's a prequel series, another one, which obviously they are very prevalent, but as long as they're awesome, which far they have been.
First and foremost to me is make it a quality show. And whether it's a prequel or not, or is something in the far future, or what have you, that's to me is irrelevant. Make it a good product, and then everything else will fall into place.
It enriches the mythology to be able to have these things that sort of explore these little corners of the Batman mythology that haven't been explored before. The more of that type of stuff you get, it just continues to enrich the overall mythology. And I think that's awesome.
And again, I'll just say this and then we'll move on. You know, 99% of the general population who will go watch Matt Reeves' Batman film, whenever that, materializes, most of them, like I said, will probably not have seen this Alfred prequel. So for them, not diluting the brand at all, in my opinion. It's just, it's non-existent to these people. So it really is. If I like it, great. If I don't, I won't watch it. Simple, you know, simple as that. That's what it boils down to for me. So there's, you know, that's that. But I'm intrigued.
Cool.
What's next?
Well, moving on, more TV news. Pretty much almost all of our news this episode is TV news, actually.
Yeah.
Next up is we have the news about CW Upfronts just happened. And I think it was Stephen Amell, actually, who revealed this, which is that
He's the elder statesman of the Arrowverse, so he should, yeah.
Yeah, I like to say that it sort of started with Smallville, but I always like to think about what the analogy is, whether Smallville's the grandfather and Arrow's the father, whether Smallville's like the father and Arrow's like the first kid. I don't know.
Smallville would be the I don't want to say it. Yeah, I mean, no. It's probably the father of the Arrowverse, because
the father and Arrow's the first kid.
Well, yeah, something along those lines. To me, Lois and Clark would be like the Segel of the TV kind of thing.
Okay.
The modern DC TV sort of thing.
That's fair. Well, anyway, Steven, yeah, it was him. I just confirmed that because I'm looking at the article now.
Yeah.
He revealed what the next big crossover event's going to deal with, and it's going to be airing next December, which is a little bit after this year's crossover aired. This year's crossover was in November, at the end of November, like 10 days after Justice League, actually. I remember, because it was 10 days after Justice League. So it was like we got back-to-back amazing DC crossover events, just bam-bam like that, which was awesome. This year it's going to be in December, which also is going to give us that type of thing, because Aquaman's in December, too. So, again, December's going to be... He says that the next Arrowverse crossover event is going to be dealing with Batwoman, and then it came out later that we're even going to see Gotham City, I believe, in this crossover, which I think is just awesome. I think Batwoman's a really cool character. It's great to find. I don't know what Earth she's going to be in on or coming from in this crossover. That's going to be one thing that's going to be really interesting. But I think it's awesome that we're finally going to get to see a Batman character. Well, we've seen Huntress and we've seen Ra's al Ghul, but like somebody who's actually wears the Bat insignia. And, you know, is directly related to... In fact, she's related by blood to Batman. So, yeah, that'll be really interesting. It'll be really cool to see that. I'm really excited about this. I think it's so cool that the Arrowverse, which obviously it's dealt with the Superman mythology, but it hasn't really dealt with the Batman mythology. It's finally bringing that in. One question I have is maybe they'll bring back Maggie Sawyer and she'll get to meet Batwoman. Because obviously they've had a relationship in the comics. I think that would be really cool if they did that. I don't know. I know that the Floriana Lima, who plays Maggie Sawyer, she left the show. So I don't know if she'd be willing to come back just for a little bit for this. But I think that would be really cool. It's something that came to mind for me. I'm really pumped about this. And I think that it gives us a lot to look forward to with this next crossover.
Ricky, what are your thoughts on Batwoman coming to the CW?
I think it's an interesting idea. I'm a fan of Batwoman. I really like Greg Rucka's run on her comics, or at least when she was on Detective Comics and he was writing it. And then I've read a bit of her latest stuff in James Tynion's Detective run. So, I really like her. I find it interesting, though, just because, like, they haven't introduced Batman or Bruce Wayne until like this latest season of Arrow, or even mentioned Gotham City. I know they've mentioned Bloodhaven before,
they have mentioned Gotham just to give you a little context.
Yeah.
By name in Supergirl. They mentioned.
Yeah.
Oliver name dropped Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, so, like, I know in the Supergirl universe, like, Batman exists because they've referenced him a couple times. But in the Arrow universe, like, they haven't really until, like you said, this season when they name-dropped him with the, do people think I'm, like, Bruce Wayne?
Yeah.
So I find it interesting that that she's coming to the show, because are they going to say like Batman exists, or does Batwoman exist before Batman, that type of thing? Or it also sort of bums me out a little bit though that in the Arrow universe, and like, you know, the like the Earth One universe that Arrow and Flash and whatever take place, that it bums me out a bit that all these heroes exist on this Earth except for Superman and his like extended family, like Supergirl and whatever. So it's that sort of bums me out a little bit that you have to cross over into a whole other universe to find one with the Superman in it, when like a whole proto Justice League is in the works and there's no Superman to be found on Earth One.
I think eventually they are going to wind up doing a crisis event where they merge the Earths. I really do.
Yeah. 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 I won't be surprised if that happens either. But aside from that, like it's interesting. I would definitely be interested in how they bring Batgirl or Batwoman to the Arrowverse. So I'm kind of looking forward to how that's done. And especially with what was it? Her and like Supergirl's potential relationship, because they can totally do like a Batman Superman thing with them.
Sure. Yeah.
And even like how her relationship would be with Arrow, because you know, they have a very similar thing, but also like she's got that whole military background as well. So yeah, it'd be interesting.
I think. First of all, I really enjoy the character as well, and I've read all the runs that you mentioned, Ricky, so I'm right there with you. In terms of how they're going to bring her in, I think the obvious choice here, this is just me, if I was running the show based on the existing, what we have to work with, I would venture to say that the Gotham we're going to be seeing is going to be on Supergirl's Earth. Since we already have an established sort of idea of Batman exists.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah,
Superman,
yeah.
Superman's teamed up with him. They mentioned that. So with that in mind, I'm going to say that Batwoman will be hailing from Earth, whatever number Supergirl is on.
38.
There you go. And so that's where I think they're going to go. And remember, the other couple crossovers that Supergirl's been in, you know, been part of, it's all been her coming over to Earth One. Whereas now, you know, except for the time that Flash ventured over, but the main, the Fortnite crossovers have always been her coming over. So I think going to Gotham on her Earth, I think is gonna be what happens.
Yeah, and that would be really cool if that happens. If, like you said, if they cross over into her Earth now.
Yeah, because it's
hopefully that means we might get Superman and Martian Manhunter and Guardian in the crossover.
Well, and the other thing I want to say about the Batgirl thing, or sorry, the Batwoman here, I even did it. I knew it was going to happen. I didn't think it was going to happen this soon. I thought it was going to happen closer to the crossover, but I went ahead and did it. But we're gonna have the swear jar equivalent of how many times I call Batwoman Batgirl and put it in the put it in the jar. I think that, you know, if all goes well with this appearance, and I'm assuming she'll appear on all four nights, if that's her big launch into this universe, to me it's a no-brainer that CW is using this as sort of a backdoor pilot for a Batwoman series, because with the demographics of that network, and all that, and the history of that network, it would be completely ridiculously stupid, in my opinion, if they do all this and set her up, and it's a one-off. So I think there's going to be potential for an eventual spin-off, again, provided everything goes well.
Either that, or I could see them doing what they did with the Ray last year's crossover, where they set her up.
But once you give me live action Gotham City and Batwoman and an extension of that, I don't want a 5-minute CW seed show. I want, give me the full, you know.
Sure, sure. No, I would prefer that too.
I don't want the Costco sample equivalent of a TV show.
A what equivalent?
A Costco sample. You know, when you go to Costco and they give you samples of food.
Oh,
that's what the CWC is. They're like, here.
They do feel like that, yeah. But I'm just saying, I'm not saying that that's what I'd want. I'm just saying that, that I could see them doing that too with her. I would prefer. I mean, I'd take that. Yeah. I'd rather have that than nothing. But I think that, I mean, obviously, I'd prefer her to get a full live action TV show spinning out of this.
Yeah.
But I could also see them doing what they did with DeRay and giving her an animated series. And then maybe, I mean, even if they did that though, she could still pop up from time to time on the other, on in live action on the other shows too, which is what they were supposed to do with Maury McCabe. It's just that that actress got busy, which is why they had to use a different vixen on Legend of Tomorrow.
But how busy has she gotten? Because I haven't seen her in anything, anything aside from, personally, I haven't seen her in anything aside from the Arrow.
Well, do you watch every single TV show and movie that comes out?
No, but usually when these people get other jobs, you read about it on, you know,
well, I think I did. I think I did hear what she's in. I think I don't know what it is, but I think I did hear she's on some TV show or something.
I haven't, so it'd be news to me. But whatever. Yeah, whatever.
Well, no, I mean, I know that for a fact that she does have a different commitment. I just don't know what it is, or that she did at one point. But yeah, and the other thing I was gonna ask you guys, do you remember? I very vividly remember, and I couldn't find it when I looked it up. I didn't dig that hard, but there was a rumor about either Batwoman or Batgirl appearing in the Arrowverse several years ago, probably a year and a half or 2 years, not several, a year and a half or 2 years ago, I remember, there was a rumor that came out that one of them was going to appear, and then we didn't hear about anything until now, so I don't know whether this is, I don't know whether that rumor was true and it just took them a while to make everything materialize, or whether that rumor was completely unrelated and it, you know, I don't know if
given all the stuff they have going in the Arrowverse,
yeah.
You know, it doesn't surprise me that it's taken a while. So whether this is a response to that or this was what birthed that rumor, I have no idea. But look, it's happening, and I'm glad it's happening. So it's
amen.
And again, hopefully, it's another example of that stupid rule of you can't have this character or that character on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I hope this is another example of that going away, because I think it's.
Well, Batwoman isn't in the movies.
I know, but it's...
Yeah, but she's still, like, part of the Bat family. And since she is directly now related to Bruce Wayne, now his cousin instead of, like, distant cousins. Then.
Well, we had Van Wayne on Powerless.
Yeah, but that's ridiculously stupid. Don't even bring that up. That's ridiculous.
I love that show.
That statement... This says all you need to say about that. Let's move on, because that, please,
that show is so funny.
And there's a reason why it doesn't exist anymore. All right, what's next?
All right, well, next up related to that is we have we just found out what we're going to be seeing on the Arrow in the Arrowverse next year. Now we find out when we're going to be able to see it, or not the specific dates, but at least what days of the week each one of the shows is going to be on in the fall. First up, Supergirl is going to be on at 8 o'clock on Sunday nights, which obviously we found out a while back that CW is going to be doing Sunday night programming coming up this year. And so, yeah, Supergirl is going to be on Sunday nights at 8. Monday is going to be a double dose of DC with Legend of Tomorrow at 8 and Arrow at 9. And then Tuesday is going to be another double dose of DC with The Flash at 8 and Black Lightning at 9. So basically they're all the DC CW shows are going to be at the beginning of the week, which is interesting. I'm cool with that. And maybe that means, hopefully that means it won't overlap with any of the other DC TV shows. We don't know when Krypton, if it gets renewed, or when Gotham is going to be airing. I don't think we mentioned this when we talked about Gotham. Gotham won't be on till the mid-season. They're going to wait till the mid-season for that.
Yeah, that makes sense. But, and then air them all probably sequentially, yeah.
Yes. But if they stick with Gotham airing when it airs this season and Krypton airing when it aired this season, if it gets renewed, and if these shows, if this schedule sticks for the second half of the season, then that would mean that these shows wouldn't be overlapping with Krypton or Arrow, because Krypton currently is on Wednesdays and Arrow is on Thursdays. Well, Krypton's at 10 o'clock on Wednesday, so I guess it wouldn't overlap anyways.
Yeah, Krypton really doesn't overlap with anything. It's okay.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. But Gotham, at least this means, hopefully this means...
But I highly, just to poke a hole in your speculation, I don't think Gotham is going to air on Thursday because of football, so...
Oh, that's right. Fox did do their football thing. That's right, because I think we found out earlier that one of the people, like one of the higher-ups at Fox said that they couldn't air it on Thursdays anymore a while back. Yeah. And obviously now we know it's because of football.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is a great.
Yeah, that's the reason why I think they're canceling Brooklyn Nine-Nine as well, because of
that's the excuse they gave for canceling Lucifer as well. Yeah. Is the fact that they needed to make room for football. But
that's a great point. So maybe I still hope none of these overlap with Gotham, because I remember when Gotham used to overlap with Supergirl on Monday nights, it used to really bug me because I would choose Gotham over Supergirl, but it was really frustrating to have to not.
The move to Sunday nights for Supergirl kind of is worrisome a little bit, I think, because Sunday nights are always considered kind of a graveyard shift.
Sure, but then again, remember the only thing that I can say that sort of may dissipate your fears is that CW rarely cancels anything, so the fact that it's on Sunday doesn't really alarm me too much. Also,
yeah, exactly. The numbers the CW gets are completely different to the numbers Fox.
I'll never forgive the CW for canceling No Tomorrow, though. I still have not gotten over
that. It's the one show they've canceled in 10 years.
The other thing I'll say though regarding that though is that Fox has had The Simpsons and Family Guy on Sunday nights for forever, and those shows are.
Yeah, but it's a totally different.
Yeah, those have gone on forever, but they're different compared to like a full hour primetime kind of show.
And the only other thing I'll say about the Sunday thing is, I don't think they'd be putting like there's a reason they're putting Charmed. They don't want Charmed to fail. So if Sunday was sort of the death.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think they'd put a show that they're really
pushing. Yeah, because Supergirl the lead-in to Charmed? Is that it? Yeah.
I believe it is, yeah. So I think, if I had to predict that eventually one of these shows is going to go first, I think the order would be Arrow followed by Legends would be the way these shows would sort of, go out. But I, given it's the CW, I mean, Supernatural's on what, season 100? What number are we on? I don't even know. So with the CW, I never get worried unless literally nobody's watching the show, which is just probably what happened to your show there, Jordan.
I was watching it. Well, I love that show.
And see, maybe it's your fault. Maybe you're the curse of the. Maybe they're like, that Jordan guy is the only guy who wanted to cancel it. Let's get rid of it.
It was a great show. And Brainiac 5 on Supergirl, speaking of Supergirl, was on that show. He was a series regular on that show.
Well, it makes sense.
And he was hilarious on it.
They like to keep working with people in-house that they've worked with before, so that makes sense.
And Jenna Dewan Tatum, who played Lucy Lane on Supergirl, was also on that show.
Well, she's not a Tatum anymore because I think they separated, but yeah.
Oh, did they? Okay. Well, she wasn't a series regular. She was on an episode.
I don't follow celebrity relationships, so I could be totally wrong on that. But last I heard. What's next on the docket?
Well, that's it for our TV news. Now, this is our last piece of news, which relates to the comics, which is, I am very excited about this news, guys. We're getting more DC Looney Tunes specials. Mm-hmm. I loved the Batman Elmer Fudd special that Tom King wrote last year, and I am so excited for these, especially because one of them is going to be a Catwoman one, and it looks great to me. It's going to be Catwoman teaming up with Tweety and Sylvester. It's going to be called Catwoman, Tweety, and Sylvester Special Number 1. Written by Gail Simone with art by Anaki Miranda, and he is amazing. He's one of my favorite artists. He was drawing Catwoman at the very end of the New 52 in her solo series, and I just loved his work, so it's awesome to see him working on Catwoman again. And then there's going to be sort of like they did with, and I only read the Batman Elmer Fudd one from the first series of these, so I don't know if they did this for all of the books, but the Batman Elmer Fudd one had sort of a serious story for most of it, and then a backup sort of goofy story.
Yeah, each one had a
tone. They all did that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
A tone
so it's
specific
the same thing
for the universe. So one was DC Universe, the other one was more Looney Tunes sort of cartoony style.
Sure. So the in this case, they're doing this again, and for the Catwoman one, the backup story is going to be written by Shea Fontana with art by Walter Carson. And then it's going to the cover. They release the cover, and it's hilarious. It's Catwoman holding Sylvester, and Sylvester's got Tweety in his, I was about to say hands, his paws.
Yeah.
Really funny cover. It looks awesome. And that's by Emanuela Lupacino. And here's the description for you guys. In his relentless pursuit of Tweety, Sylvester suddenly finds himself with a new human ally, Catwoman. Tweety then realizes that he's going to need some help too and recruits a superhero of his own, Black Canary. It isn't long before the scale of the conflict begins to get out of control, and suddenly there's a full-scale war between cats and birds that threatens to take over all of Gotham. This sounds like a blast, guys. I'm so excited for this one. They are all I'm about to tell you what the other two are, but of course I had to prioritize the Catwoman one because that's what I'm so excited about.
Nobody's shocked by this, Jordan. Not one person.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. But they're all going to be releasing on Wednesday, August 29th, and they're all going to be $4.99. The other ones that we're getting is Harley Quinn and Gossamer. It's going to be called Harley Quinn Gossamer Special Number 1. Written by Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor, with art by Pierre Brito. And then the backup story is going to be by Sholly Fish, with art by Dave Alvarez. And then the cover is going to be, well, we already have the cover. It's by Amanda Connor. Here's the description for this one.
That's not a surprise, because she did do everything
Did you see their variant cover for the most recent issue of Batman, with Batman and Catwoman in the movie theater together?
Yes, I did. Oh my goodness. All right, move along. Let's go. We got Smallville to do. Let's move along. Let's go. Don't get caught up in your Catwoman.
I'm sorry. Let's go. I'm sorry. I know.
Let's move along. Yeah.
No, no, not issues. It's a very good. If anything, it's a very good issue to have.
Yeah, well, that's the big one. Let's go. Move along.
A violent storm leaves a large crate washed up on the beach at Coney Island. When Harley breaks it open to see what's inside, she suddenly has a new playmate to add to her cast of friends, a large, furry, orange beast called Gossamer. It's all fun and games until a giant robot attacks them. But who sent it? Harley immediately suspects only one man. But is it really the Joker behind this destructive rampage? And then, finally, we've got the... Oh, actually, there's two more. I'm sorry. The other one is Lex Luthor Porky Pig, but I don't have the details for that one up. But I'll tell you what the last one that I do have the details for is. And then I guess if you want to check out the Lex Luthor Porky Pig details, sorry, you're on your own for that. the Joker Daffy Duck special number one, is written by Scott Lobdell, with art and cover by Brett Booth and Norm Ratland, with the backup story by Joey Cavalieri, with art by Luciano Vecchio. When Daffy Duck pays a call to the Acme company, When Daffy Duck pays a call to the Acme corporate headquarters in Gotham City, he finds the company long gone and their abandoned building now occupied by the Joker. With the hit in progress, Daffy tries to sneak away, only to find himself in the clutches of the Clown Prince of Crime. But Joker decides that there's some potential in this manic bird and forces Daffy to join his gang. Will he find a way to escape, or will he become the Joker's new right-hand duck? I'm really excited. Primarily, I'm just so excited for the Catwoman one. I'm definitely going to pick that one up. The other ones sound cool, too. I'm glad they're doing more of these, because, like I said, I love the Batman Elmer Fudd special. And, very exciting news here.
I mean, from my perspective, I did enjoy quite a bit the Batman Elmer Fudd book. So I've had fun with these. I've read all the other ones. Again, they were fun, and so I'm down for this continued collaboration. Sure, why not, Ricky?
I never actually got a chance to read the Looney Tunes Batman specials or DC specials. I think I checked a couple of them out. While in the store, just flipped through them, but I never got to read them in full. And the Elmer Fudd Batman one, I've heard it is actually great. So So I've got to check those out. And some of these do sound pretty interesting and fun. So I think I'll definitely check this second round out.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Let's talk Smallville.
We are moving on to our continuing of our Smallville retrospectives with season 3. How have we been doing this? I can't even remember how
we usually do our just general overall thoughts, and then we'll go into specific episodes we liked and then the ones we disliked. That's usually how
one we disliked. I don't have any of those.
Okay, well, you won't be talking for that portion of the podcast. That'll be me and Ricky, but yeah.
No, I'll be defending them.
Well, no. You'll just be... Go look at pictures of Catwoman. You'll be fine. all right, let's start with our guest.
You know, I can't say no to that.
Yeah, there you go.
That's an easy way to get me to leave.
Exactly. I should have tried that more often. Ricky, what are your general thoughts on season 3? I mean, I know you recently rewatched a bit of it, or I don't know how far you got, but what are your impressions of what from compared to what you remember from when you first watched season 3?
So season 3 is one of my personal favorites of Smallville. Like I went back and forth when we were deciding seasons and stuff like on which one I would want to discuss. 5 and 9 were very close, but I decided on 3 just because to me, it kind of represents a turning point by the end of the season for like the direction the show's going, and even like throughout the season, like it's much more serialized than the previous two seasons, because so many story aspects from the episodes and even from fillers, like they feed into like the overarching story of season 3.
Especially all that Lex and Lionel stuff, really.
Yeah. And this is the season where seasons 1 and 2 didn't really have like any kind of, you know, central villain as the later seasons would have. But this season is kind of the one where like Lionel Luthor really rears his head as the season villain, but also just as kind of Smallville's ultimate and like first villain, because then kind of when you go back and watch seasons 1 and 2, you see how much Lionel had his hand in those two seasons. And then in this one, he like really steps up into the light as the villain. And yeah, you just see the greater scope of his villainy, and just also how much of a terrible father he was to Lex, and understand why Lex gets set on this journey to ultimately become Superman's villain. And it's largely because of, his relationship with Lionel. So,
agreed on all counts. Yeah. For me, like what I liked about the season is, again, you marked a sort of a shift for the series, and it really does sort of it's the beginning of the downfall of sort of Lex Luthor into villainy. You really start seeing that sort of percolate and develop, and again, you really get an exploration, because even in past seasons he'll tell you that, you know, Lionel's a jerk, Lionel's this, Lionel's that. And you get like small glimpses of it, but not to the extent that you do here. And you realize that with a father like that, well, no wonder Lex is so screwed up and ends up where he ends up. And so that was interesting to watch unfold and sort of watch his friendship with Clark slowly deteriorate or start to deteriorate. Also, what I liked about it is that they still kept... You know, they weren't as big of a focus, but they still keyed in on the Kawachi Caves and the importance that they play to Clark eventually, you know, finding the fortress later on. And to the grander mythology, but also even the fillers, I found most of them, with the exception of a couple, like you were saying, Ricky, a lot of them fed into the larger objective of the season, which in the first two seasons, the fillers were fillers. Just like if you didn't watch them, I found that you'd be okay and there was nothing really of import that you missed. So overall, I enjoyed this season. I don't know. I mean, when it comes to the end and we give our rating, I don't know if it'll be as rated as high as season 2 for me, but it was still really, really strong, and I really enjoyed it. Jordan, we know you love everything about Smallville, right down to the catering, which you never tasted. But what are your general thoughts on season three?
I adore season three. I'm with you. Season two, obviously, as I said before, is my favorite season. So I'm with you that I don't quite enjoy it quite as much as season three. As season two. But yeah, I love this season so much. I always talk about Smallville, even though I love every season. My favorite seasons, with the exception of season seven, which is my second favorite season, but the rest of my favorite seasons tend to be the early seasons, because I love the focus on sort of the teen romantic drama high school aspect of the show that we really see in the early seasons. And of course, that's prevalent still in season three. It's Clark's junior year of high school. So that's great. Season three has three of my top 20 episodes of the entire series in it. I'll mention later what those are as we go through them. But yeah, it's got three of those in it. I really like, obviously, one thing that I really like in the season is although Clark and Lana aren't together for most of the season, we do get some great Lana stuff. We get it in.
That ship name, this ship crap, I can't tell you.
I should have seen that. I should have heard that coming, seen that coming, Ricky. But we will have to discuss that.
I'll talk a little bit about Lana later, but yeah.
Because that's something that I love in this season is we get right there in the first episode in Exile, we get a Klana kiss, then we get Relic, which is just, I mean, technically it's not Clark and Lana, but it sort of kind of is, which. I mean, that episode, just as a Klana shipper, I just love. And it's just, I love so much of what they did with that relationship in the season when they did do stuff with it, even though they weren't together for most of the season. When they did do stuff with it, it was amazing. I love the Lex and Lionel stuff in this season. It has, and we'll talk about this later, I won't mention what scene it is, but Ricky, you and I were talking about this on Twitter recently. In my opinion, it has the best Lex and Lionel scene in the entire series. There's a scene, and that's saying something because they have so many great scenes in the series. There's a scene between Lex and Lionel in this season that I cannot watch without getting like full-bodied chills watching that scene, and it's just amazing. So that's so great. Yeah, this season, I guess I'll leave it there, and then we can get into specific later. But yeah, I just think this season is amazing.
All right, so I guess I'll start us off with some, you know, I'll start us off with a couple of my favorites. And one of the ones, you know, the pilot, or this is the pilot. The
premiere.
Season, the season premiere, that's it.
yeah.
Always, you know, and I've said this before. One thing that you can count on with Smallville is that their premieres and their finale episodes were always top-notch. And they were consistent with that throughout 10 seasons. And Exile is no different. Seeing Clark in Metropolis in Exile, you know, where he ends up sort of, you know, you see him robbing a bank and he ends up in the employ of Morgan Edge. Seeing Tom Welling actually play, get more of a chance to play the red kryptonite infected, Clark was good because
he's so good at that.
I think Tom Welling is really actually, and I don't often compliment him, so this will be a welcome thing for our listeners who love Tom Welling. You know, I think he really excels at playing a alternate take on Clark Kent. So whether it be in this case Red Kryptonite, or you know Ultraman when he played Ultraman, or even Bizarro, I'll throw in there.
I was just talking with our buddy Zach Moore from Always Holding a Smallville, who we had on for our season one retrospective, about the idea of Tom Welling playing Lex on Supergirl and how he actually might, even though it would be kind of weird and take a little bit of getting used to, that because he's so good at playing a villain, as you mentioned with Clark Luthor and with, you know, here playing Red K, Clark, that he would actually make a great. He's so great at playing a villain, and I think that he could actually be a really good Lex. The line in that episode that always stands out to me is when Morgan Edge walks in his room and he has that line about Morgan Edge asks him about his scar and he's like, "Yeah, my dad was a real bastard," and like he's so good in it, and the way he delivers that line, like it's just Tom Welling just killed it in that episode. Yeah,
and so and just like. you really when you're seeing Clark and like sort of, you know, rob a bank essentially, it really stresses the point, I think, of his upbringing and the importance that Kent play in keeping this individual, you know, grounded and basically putting him on the path, constantly keeping him on the path that would eventually lead us to Superman, right? So,
and we get Maggie Sawyer in that scene for the first time, I believe.
Yeah.
No, I think she appeared in season two.
She was in
I
season
think.
Two, yeah.
And then she returned here.
Yeah. So, okay, it was the episode.
But it was awesome to see her again, because watching it, I was like, oh, Maggie's back. And
she was in. Yeah, you're right. She was in Insurgents when Clark did the Daily Planet jump.
Yeah, I would like to say that one of the other things that I really like about this premiere is the fact that we get to see more of Metropolis, because with the exception of a few scenes, this episode is entirely set in Metropolis, which in the early seasons of the show like never happened except for like the rare occasion. So this was really cool.
And is that club in Metropolis not awesome?
Yeah, I would have gone and checked it out. If it existed, I'd go there. But I would have gone there. And I think I'm out of the clubbing phase, but that's besides the point. But, you know, and also I got to give them, you know, I got to hand it to them for the couple episodes that they got him. Rutger Hauer as Morgan Edge was.
Yeah, he was great.
Pretty awesome casting.
Yeah,
and it's funny because
Batman Begins.
Yeah, no. The whole time I was rewatching the episode, I'm like, "Damn it, I got to rewatch Batman Begins." it went through my head. So,
you get the memo?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So note to self: I got to rewatch Batman Begins.
never a bad time for that.
No, I liked one of the other episodes that I.
Hold on.
Oh, you still want to? Yeah.
Yeah, we got to talk more about Exile, because we got the episode where we got Clark and Lana, and we got a Chronicus in that episode, which is at the club, which I love so much seeing them finally. I mean, she's finally reunited with him, and then I love that she, you know, the scene with her and Chloe when Chloe reveals that she's known where Clark was all along, and Lana goes there to get him to come back. But I love how Lana in that scene where she comes with him and he's like, I'm not going back, but get on the bike or whatever with me and come with me. And I love that she loves Clark so much that even though she came to get him to try and get him to go back, that, you know, she wants to be with him. And, you know, she goes to the club with him. And then even though she's like, here's the thing, he thinks when she calls his parents and she's like, yo, you got to come get Clark. And obviously we see what Jonathan does and he goes to Jor-El and gets some powers and everything. Yeah. But I love that, you know, Clark thinks she's betraying him there, but I love that she did that out of love for him. She's trying to, she just wants him back, because, I mean, they finally, at the end of season two, they got together, and it was amazing. I mean, I loved it, certainly. but, you know, she's trying to get him to come back with her, and I loved all of that, you know, to come back with her and everything.
The interesting thing was the deal that, you know, Jonathan makes with Jor-El, in the sense that the whole time, I remember when I was watching the first go around, I said, well, this is going to come back and play into Jonathan's death. And they sort of eventually, and they sort of were teasing that with the heart problems and the heart surgery that he would have to have later in the season. Mm-hmm. But then when you remember his actual death scene and how that came about, I wonder if it seems to me that the Jor-El deal doesn't, in the grand scheme of things, doesn't actually contribute to his heart issue. But I, at the time when I was watching it, I was like the first go around, I was sure that that was going to be the catalyst for his eventual demise. I mean, Jor-El is still a factor and Clark's decision later on is a factor. But when I was watching the season first go around, that's what I thought. And I think the actual fight between them happened
It's awesome
in the second episode, right?
I remember my reaction watching the pilot on TV and like that cliffhanger when Jonathan speed runs at Clark like I was like, what, oh my god, like I was floored that Jonathan had the Superman powers.
That was cool. And
it ends with that epic cliffhanger of he pushes him out the window and they're yeah. people falling out the window, and I'm like, oh yeah, it's so cool, dude. It's so yeah. cool.
And the one thing I do want to mention, I think this happened in the first episode, where he's in the phone booth.
Yes, that was a nice callback.
And he yeah. and the symbols, I'm like, all right, you got me with the nostalgia. Yeah, I'm there. You got me.
Fortunately, nobody said that's a bad outfit.
Yeah, I think that would have been out of place considered you were shirtless and had a scar on his chest. But yeah. That would have been a terrible callback. But yeah, so extended, the second episode with that fight in Phoenix, it was a cool fight because, you know, for the first few seasons, whenever Clark would fight somebody, the extent of it would be, I'm going to throw this guy across the room. And that was the extent of the fight. Where this, you actually see them trading blows and you know, it was very cool. And it's like, just again, I got to give credit to Tom Welling because the way he played it and the sort of the nonchalant rudeness the way he spoke to his father was so out of character for Clark. Mm-hmm. And it was, he pulled it off really well. One of the other episodes that I really enjoy, and this is more for the fact that it has, I think it's R.E.M. music, and this is mainly...
Oh, Slumber! Slumber, yes! This is mainly the reason... one of mine, too.
No, this is the only reason, pretty much the only reason I enjoy it, is because it has R.E.M. music. Also, there's one thing that it has, watching it in hindsight, it has that sort of Inception-y kind of vibe to it, you know.
The dream, because the whole like first half of that episode is in a dream, and you don't know it.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm like, it's got a rewatching it. I was like, it's got a little bit of an Inception vibe. I'll go with it. And then I'm not gonna beat around the bush. If I'm Clark, I'm going to be daydreaming about Skinny Dip Moonlana too. I'm not going to beat around the bush. It is what it is. And then the ending when he's like, she's like, oh, we should, you know, and I'm not, again, everybody knows I detest the whole Lana shipping aspect of it. But, the you can grunt all you want.
Who said anything about Skinny Dip?
That part was funny where she's like, I don't know what you, or I don't know what the line she said, but.
It was
funny.
Who said anything about skinny dipping?
It wasn't entertaining interaction. I'll give it that. So there were a couple of things, even though it's not one of like the strongest episodes for me, it's one that I enjoyed for a couple of reasons, namely the REM stuff and the Inception-esque vibe that it gave.
I know our buddy Zach thinks I'm crazy for this. Slumber is my favorite season 3 episode.
He's right.
It's
really
It is my favorite season 3 episode. I love this episode. It's one of the three, like I said, in season 3. It's one of the three that's in my top 20 list of the whole show. And yeah, it's my favorite of those three in season 3. Mm-hmm. I think this episode's amazing. And for me, it's like, I love episodes. First of all, I love episodes that are Clark and Lana on an adventure together. Obviously, at the end of season... I'm nothing if not predictable. I'll say that.
That's for sure. Yeah.
But I love this episode because it's like I brought up Accelerate when we talked about season 2 is one of my favorite episodes of that season. And it's another one that's Clark and Lana in an adventure together. I love this one because we're getting the same thing. Even though Clark and Lana aren't together in this episode, we do get them on an adventure together, working together. I love it. I love the beginning of them skinny dipping together. I mean, that's just a great Lana scene. It's amazing. I love any episodes of Smallville that really focus in on the small town aspect of Smallville. And I brought this up before on our previous retrospectives. I love episodes that really focus in on that really feel like it's a small town adventure. I love that. And it's like, you know, Clark, he's got a new next door neighbor. It's this girl, who's there going into his dreams and all. And I just loved it. You know, Clark and Lana going over there to her house, meeting a new neighbor. It's just, there's something that really appeals to me about episodes that focus on, that really make it feel like it's a show about this sort of idyllic small town. And I love that about this episode. I think Slumber is just, it's an amazing episode.
Well, it does invoke that. I will give you that. It does invoke that small town, aspect, keying in on that for sure.
Right.
I don't agree with you where it's one of the top. What would you say in the top 20? I wouldn't even put it anywhere.
Yeah, it is. It's in my top 20. Yeah, well, it's my favorite of this season.
So. Yeah, well, it's nowhere near in my top 20. But anyway, but one of the ones I really did like, and this could be in my top 20 for sure, is Perry. I don't know how you guys felt about that, but I thought that
Perry is pretty good.
I thought it was great. And Mike, what the heck is his
name? Michael McKean.
Michael McKean.
That's it.
Who is actually married to Annette O'Toole. That's their real life couple.
Nepotism casting at play there. It was good. But it worked. But it worked. It really did work. And the whole aspect of, you know, the solar flares, you know, screwing with Clark's powers.
Yeah, and that's how they discovered that Clark gets his powers from the sun, too. Yeah,
which was ingenious,
Yeah, I really like the comedy aspect of that episode. Yes, like, it's not overdone. It's not, quite in your face. Like, all the jokes are, like...
Clark tells Justin, are
natural and organic. And, the first bit you really do, like... Just kind of, I wouldn't say hate Perry, but you also recognize kind of how sleazy he's being.
He's a jerk. There's no.
Especially to Lana. That scene at the.
I didn't mind.
And I really liked him, and I like a couple of the the call forwards, I guess, of like call me chief.
And then when he says when he's critiquing his writing. He's giving him critiques about his journalism.
Yeah.
And how, even at the end, when he's like, I have some pull at the Daily Planet, if you ever,
It's one of my few criticisms of season three of like how they didn't bring him back towards the end once Lionel's going to trial and stuff. Cause like I was sure that was a lot of that information that Perry dug up.
That's right. Yeah, they could have done that.
Yeah. So it's one of my few criticisms of like, oh, you could have brought him back towards the end and really like tied that loop off.
That's a good point. I didn't think
Interestingly enough, we didn't see him till season 9, I think.
Yeah. It's not. Yeah, 8 or 9. I think it's 9. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's 9 when he comes back with Martha and they are together on the show.
Yeah.
And it's nice that they eventually got to work, in a scene in that later season. Because that was
they didn't share a scene in this episode.
No.
And I love Ricky, you brought it up, the comedy in this episode. It was great with some of the comedy with Perry. One part that always stands out to me is when Clark tells Jonathan, after he saved Perry from the truck, he's like, oh, he probably doesn't even remember who I am anymore. And then Perry comes in he's riding on the back of somebody's pickup truck, and he's like, Clark Kent. That was funny. But this is another. What were we saying, Adam?
No, and then the cool thing when he throws the tractor because of the solar flares.
Yeah, that's good
that
too.
And it just lands, conveniently right in front of.
And then Perry pours out his drink when he sees Clark running.
Yeah.
That was funny too. But this is another episode that really, I think, emphasizes the small town aspect of Smallville. You know, you see the bus stop, you see what's that bar called?
Wild Coyote,
I think. Wild Coyote. And you see that, and I mean, I just love that type of stuff. So, I mean, literally, it's Clark giving Perry a tour of Smallville. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I it's another episode that really emphasizes that. And I love that. Yeah, it's a great episode.
What were you going to say, Ricky?
Oh, I was just going to talk about kind of what a couple of my other favorite episodes were. But you go ahead. Okay.
Go. No, give you a chance to lead. Yeah, go ahead.
A couple of my other favorite episodes, kind of as a bit of a two-parter, I guess, is Shattered and Asylum. Of Lex going kind of insane, and then he gets locked in the asylum, and I really like Asylum just for bringing back a lot of or a few of Clark's early rogue scout.
Not all meteor freaks, because you got Van there too. Anti-meteor freak. Yeah. We saw it in.
So I really like that bit of bringing back Clark's early rogues gallery and attempt to break Lex out. And then that's, of course, you get kind of the start of the second act of the season after Lionel wipes Lex's memory. Yeah. And so that's it's not really a two-parter per se.
But they do go hand in hand for sure.
Yeah. So I really like those two episodes.
The thing that I think is the strongest is, you know, he's already been great up to this point in Smallville. But Michael Rosenbaum really gets to excel in these.
Mm-hmm. He's one of my favorite aspects of the whole show.
Yeah. Absolutely.
To me, he's the definitive Lex Luthor at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no question.
At least live action for sure.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's great. Like you mentioned earlier, that this season you kind of get to see more of him sliding into villainy. And while that's not like outright, because by the end of season three, he's still good guy. It's not really until season four he takes on that villain mantle. But here you can totally see the steps of it. Like we just talked about Perry. That's the episode where he slams Perry against the wall and pretty much threatens to kill him, and that's a motivating factor to get him to see his therapist, who unfortunately is working for Lionel. But yeah, like Rosenbaum is just great this season, especially in one episode we'll talk about later.
And it's even how, like, I believe. Well, first of all, you start seeing like they're planting the seeds of him going insane, you know, like Lionel's trying to setting it all up. And sure enough, that's when he sees Clark using his powers.
Yeah.
And of course, nobody believes him. But Rosenbaum's reaction to seeing Clark, you know, slamming, you know, that car, you know, I think he ripped the car.
Literally, it's a shot that they use later on for several seasons in the opening credits. It literally, the car wraps around Clark. Clark braces himself and sort of tries to shoulder it, and the car literally like makes a U around him.
Mm-hmm.
It's an awesome shot.
The effects on that were great, but Rosenbaum's reaction, and he's like, did you see it? And of course there's nobody there, and you do feel so like in those moments you feel bad for Lex, because it's like, poor guy, you know, he's being manipulated the way he is and all that, and he finally gets vindication of, you know, his suspicions, and here it is, nobody's gonna.
There's also the scene going back to Slumber in the dream sequence when there's two times he finds out this season, because he finds out in the dream sequence when he hits Clark with the sword, which is also something, another shot, coincidentally enough, they used in the credit.
But the dream sequence doesn't really count.
Well, no, it doesn't count, but I just think it's an interesting coincidence that he sort of finds out twice this season, and that, even though it wasn't real, that scene in Slumber when he finds out too.
It was a great scene, but again, everything Michael Rosenbaum, you know, pretty much did was great, and you know, I found it a nice nod, even if a little convenient, that the pills that he was not taking, you know, they he spits them out into red, blue, and yellow. It's like, all right.
Yeah.
I see what you did there. But yeah, those two episodes were phenomenal. And you really get the sense of, you know, man, not only is Rosenbaum great, but man, Lionel Luthor is one SOB of the highest order. Like it just keeps getting confirmed, especially in these two episodes. So great that you mentioned those, Ricky, because they were two of my favorites of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to call out to, and I know Jordan mentioned it, but he liked it for all the other reasons that I'm not going to mention. But Relic, I like, not because of the,
yeah, Relic is a pretty good
not
one.
Not because of the ridiculously stupid reasons you liked it for, but I
ridiculously stupid.
All the kissing of Tom Welling and Kristen Crew. I enjoyed it for the fact that it sort of, the idea that Jor-El had been to Earth before, and sort of he was going through a similar thing with his father that Clark is now going through with him. So the parallels there were great.
I view Relic as sort of, even though this isn't what it technically is, I think there's a way you can sort of view it, and I like to think about it sometimes, is like, it's like an alternate universe Clark and Lana love story.
Yeah, well, where you keep hanging on to that
it's like an alternate, and it's such a beautifully tragic love story too, that that I just, I mean, I love so much that, I mean, it's, and that scene when Clark flies with, when, not Clark, with where Jor-El flies with Louise, I should say.
Yeah, no, the flight thing was cool. That, it was very much.
That scene is beautiful. It's beautiful.
It was very and, much, I mean, it was very much like, you know, what you see in most Superman movies.
Yeah,
Where he and Lois have that fly, you know, that
prerequisite. What, well, it's straight out of Superman for All Seasons, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think with that he does with Lana there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love that. I love that this episode is another one that focuses on not, well, yes, the small towniness of Smallville, but also the history of Smallville as a town, which I think is just so cool because Smallville in this show is such a, I mean, the town of Smallville, especially in seasons 1 to 7, is such a huge part of the show. I mean, obviously it's the title of the show, but it's such a huge part of the show. And to get an episode that not only focuses on the small towniness of it that I love so much, but also on the town's history, which I think is just so cool.
Yeah, I mean, you have the introduction of Lachlan Luthor, right? Which and then which later feeds into the whole subplot about him killing his parents or orchestrating his parents' death, right?
Yeah.
Lionel. And so,
yeah, which is kind of, we mentioned it earlier, but like how even the filler episodes had like important plot beats for the season. Like this is a filler episode because, you know, it doesn't really feed into the main narrative of like Clark trying to get away from Jor-El and stuff like that, but then you do find out like the first seeds of Lionel may have been involved in his in Lex's grandparents' death, but like you get those seeds
and then but also there's the moment at the end where you get like it's implied where that
he says, I don't think, he said to Jonathan, I don't think you found me by accident. I think you were chosen,
Hiram says to Jor-El, if you ever need anything, you know where to find us.
So yeah.
The implication, even before Clark says anything, is that, all right,
Jor-El remembered
his time on Earth, on Smallville.
Yeah, which is then later confirmed in, I think, like season 9 when the young Jor-El comes.
He says
like the Kent household was filled with love that it was the best place to send Clark.
Yeah, so that aspect of that, I don't know if you can call it an addition to the mythology of Jor-El choosing, because I don't know if that's been explored before where he chose the Kents. I don't know if that, to my knowledge, I can't remember if it has or not. But that, I'll just call it that for now. That addition was quite clever. And also, we got the mayor.
Cancer Man.
Yeah.
I loved.
Man. The Smoking Man from the X-Files.
I really wish Smallville utilized Cancer Man. William B. Davis, that's his name. Really wish they utilized him more because he only appears twice in the series. But
I think I heard this via Zach Moore, but from, I think it was something Craig Byrne had told him before, which is that he didn't get along well with the younger cast members. So that's why they didn't use him that much. Yeah. That's what I've heard from them. So, I love that scene where Clark confronts him at the end and just scares the living shit out of him. I mean, that scene is awesome.
That was cool where he's playing Jor-El. That was another example where I thought Tom Welling was very strong. And having to play Jor-El for the whole episode, and there are distinct differences between him and the portrayal of Tom as Clark and Jor-El that I think are worth
both Tom and Kristen did such a great job in that episode, making you really feel like it was different characters that they were playing, even though, you know.
I'll give them that for sure.
Yeah,
they were great at that. Before we move on, one episode before that you guys brought up, but I wanted to mention one more thing about it, is that Perry, the episode right before that, before Relic, was directed by, I'm not even going to try to, do either of you know how to pronounce this guy's name?
Jenna Swark, or I think
it's... Yeah, he directed the Supergirl movie, which my thoughts on that are very well documented. How many issues I have with that movie.
Sure,
And I personally think that it's the worst live-action DC movie that's ever been made.
You're wrong there, but all right. But, yeah, we'll go with it.
But he redeemed himself in my eyes is what I was trying to say. So I'm not trying to insult the guy. I think he redeemed himself with his Smallville episodes. Because this Perry was the first one he directed. Then later we'll talk about Velocity, which I have thoughts on that,
and it's not a redeeming quality in my opinion, but yeah.
And then he directed several more episodes, including, I'll just go ahead and run down what he directed, because I know some of these you will agree with me on. He directed Spell, Recruit, Blank, Spell. Exposed, Vengeance, Void, Reunion, Noir, Bride, Candor, Homecoming, and Kent.
Hmm.
Yeah, there are a bunch in there I like, and then there are also some that just the name he calls back certain things, and yeah, I don't know, but again, it's another example of them sort of pulling from the Superman family, if you will, extended family, and bringing them back, whether it be a director or an actor.
Yeah.
So that's the cool aspect of it for sure.
Yeah, speaking of bringing actor back, one of my other favorite episodes is Legacy for and one of the reasons is, of course, we get to see Christopher Reeve as Dr. Swan again. But
it'll be the last time that we saw him.
Yeah, unfortunately the last time. But it's like that episode is it doesn't come close to Rosetta. It doesn't come close to Rosetta, of course, but it's still always great to see Christopher Reeve on Smallville, and especially now we actually get him paired off with another person instead of Clark. Like, we get a couple scenes of him with Lionel Luthor, which is great. John Glover play off each other really well.
Yeah, they were great.
And written by Jeff Loeb, that episode is.
Yeah.
One of my favorite writers personally in comics. So that,
me too. Yeah. My second favorite, in fact, just after Tom King.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah.
that's a great call. That was a great episode. Look, anytime you have him explaining a Kryptonian message to Clark, like, I'm there. I'm sold. And the music and the way they employ all that, it's just, it was beautifully done.
What? We get another Clonic kiss in that episode.
Oh, gosh.
Stop that garbage.
I'm not going to stop. I'm not absolutely.
I know. At this point, I know you're not going
to stop. So I will just say this very quickly about Lana. If any listeners have seen Jordan and I talk about Lana, you'll know I'm not a big Lana fan. But that being said, I do have to say that throughout this season and even seasons one and two, like, she's okay. She's not bad. It's really season four where I start to not like her and where I think she develops a lot of her bad qualities, like her hypocriticalness and all that. But season three, she's okay. She's okay.
So then why are you groaning?
No, we're just groaning because you constantly start with that shipping garbage. But because I told you, to me, when you talk about ships, I think of, you know, either the USS Enterprise, if we're talking Star Trek, or the Titanic, you know, those, to me, those are ships.
Or how about Clark and Lois? You know, later on.
You really want to get into actual.
What about the Queen's Gambit?
Well, yeah, that too. That's a good DC callback, sure. But usually they're actual vessels and not two people's names spliced together so that they could fit a Tumblr post. But one of the episodes I really did like that we haven't mentioned, I'm surprised that we skipped over it or forgot about it, was Whisper. When he gets
I
didn't skip over it. I've been waiting for you to exhaust all the ones, all the episodes, and now whichever ones you don't mention, then I'm going back and mentioning. So
I mentioned it now. Yeah, I mentioned it now.
Don't think we're skipping over it.
I really like that episode. Again, anytime the show managed to showcase what I call sort of I had a name for them. What was it, Jordan? The mythology episodes. So, you know, like Perry is, I could say, a mythology episode. I'll even throw Relic in there because of the backstory with Jor-El and all that. and or any episode that gives him a new power, I put in that aspect. But the fact that, you know, it took being blinded for one of his powers to kick in, I thought was a clever
way. Yeah, I really like how this episode portrays his super hearing as like he didn't really have it initially, like it kicked in to adjust to his blindness. I really like that. It's kind of like I understand why later seasons, when more Kryptonians show up, they automatically have the super hearing, but I liked what this episode implied in that, like, it wouldn't have been really part of his regular power set had he not gone blind initially here.
I don't know if this was intentional, but this episode, to me, I take it as it was inspired by Blind as a Bat from Batman Animated Series.
Hmm. Yeah, I kind of forgot about that.
Never thought about that, but I can go with it. Yeah. I can go with that. No, but and again, it's one of those episodes where, like, even in some of the filler ones later on that, you know, we'll get to it with, there'll be my negatives and probably Ricky's negatives, and there'll be Jordan's positives because, again, some of Jordan's choices are oddball. even those episodes, they, this one in particular, the Whisper, it showcases, you know, the Pete and the struggle he goes through knowing the secret. It's one of the ones where you see the repercussions of that, mm-hmm. right?
Sort of setting up later down the sea. It's another sort of, as I think Ricky first brought up on this episode, sort of how this season felt more serialized in the first two seasons. And I mean, I think that's another example of that, because obviously it's leading up to him leaving at the end of the season. And, you know, first of all, it leads up to Velocity, where he tries to break out from under Clark's shadow. But then it leads up to sort of him leaving at the end of the season as well. Sort of Pete goes on a storyline this season.
So that was, you know, that aspect of it as well, not just him getting the superpower, was interesting to watch play out. I know we're gonna all three of us are gonna love Memoria, but before we dive into dive into that one, I just want to mention, you know, I also enjoyed the Talisman episode.
Well, that's after Memoria.
Yeah, I know, but I want to. Memoria is going to be one that I think. I want to discuss that with, like, just before we discuss the season finale, because I know we all really love Memoria, so I want to, you know, really key in on that. So I want to do some of the episodes the other episodes, so we can really key in on Memoria, even if they're out of order. But I just want to.
Okay, sure.
So Talisman, it's interesting because it brings back, you know, even more into focus the Kawachi case and the whole Naman and Sagitt thing.
Yeah. And it's sort of the last episode, really, that the Kawachi caves play like such an integral part.
And directed by Jonathan Kent.
Yeah, John Schneider.
I noticed that as I was watching. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. But the interesting thing was, you know, a couple of things. Whenever Professor Willowbrook calls Clark Naman, you could see how uncomfortable Clark is with that, because
which makes him more uncomfortable when Jimmy calls him CK later on.
that made me uncomfortable. I don't know about Clark, but that made me uncomfortable. But the whole fake out with Jimmy made me uncomfortable. But that's a later season. We'll
talk about later. Don't you get me started on that. You know I'll defend that. Yeah,
You can defend Fimi all you want. Fake Jimmy, as, by the way, anybody that doesn't know what I refer to as Fimmy.
I've always joked that the death of Jimmy in Batman v Superman, it's like, oh no, don't worry, he'll be back in the next one, because they'll reveal that was his cousin, DCU Jimmy Olsen happens to have a cousin with the exact same name and occupation. Yeah, don't worry, he'll be back.
I think you're partially right on that, because I do think there's a good chance they'll wind up revealing that guy was just using Jimmy Olsen's cover.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Well, that's a whole different conversation.
Probably, but yeah, let's not go there. What was I saying? Yeah. So you can see how uncomfortable Clark is with that.
Oh, and Smallville bird. Alum, by the way, in that, that was a Smallville alum, Michael Cassidy, who plays Julian Luther in season 7, who was playing Jimmy in BVS.
Oh yeah, I didn't realize that. Huh.
And he was killed in both. And he's killed in both.
I will actually say it is incredibly fun to see all these actors who both appeared in, like, there's a ton of these guys who also appeared in Man of Steel, but I don't know if you guys have watched Battlestar Galactica at all.
Yes, oh yeah, I love that
yeah.
show.
No, it is hilarious to see how many Battlestar Galactica actors are in Smallville, like in either in guest roles or in just walk-ons, because like Hilo. He appears this season in which episode was it? It was Resurrection. Yeah, he appears as Garrett's brother, and then he appears again in season 6 as one of Lois's old boyfriends. And so it's really fun to see all these Vancouver-based actors who appeared in Battlestar Galactica in this show, and then some who would later appear in Man of Steel and now Batman v Superman.
Yeah, they were just raiding Vancouver at that point. And they're like, all right, let's bring it. But you see it, like, again, how uncomfortable Clark is with that responsibility, or how it makes him, you know, that the hopes of a people make him, like he's questioning, like, can I live up to all that? Which I think is very interesting to what he would ultimately become, right? But also what I found interesting was the part about the, you know, the whole mythology where once Sagitt touches the knife, right? And so then at the end of the episode, both Lionel and Lex go for the knife, and you really don't know who touched.
Because at first he thought Lionel was Sagitt. And then Martha has that line, you need to come to terms with the fact that perhaps it's actually Lex. And it's just like, oh, that's so good.
And then, but then also the you know, Lex's interpretation of the mythology and how he explains that in his
version,
Sagitt is the hero.
Which is basically how the Lex Luthor of the comics views himself well. That's
he thinks
awesome.
He's the hero of the story.
But when you hear it from Michael Rosenbaum, you're like, wow, I can kind of see, like, I see where he's coming from. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the whole thing about Lex in the whole show, is that he's a villain that, like, even if you don't agree with what he's doing, you can a lot of times understand where he's coming from. You understand why he's doing what he's doing. And well, that's going back to the whole thing. I love that, because I love that about Lex, that he views himself as the hero. He thinks he is the savior of humanity. And I love that about him, that he thinks he's the hero, and how we see. I mean, it totally makes sense that that's how he'd interpret that prophecy. And that's another thing that frustrates me so much about Gene Hackman's Lex Luthor, is that he's going around parading himself as, I'm the greatest criminal mastermind of the world.
Yeah,
and,
well, the
he didn't view himself that way.
Yeah, well, the thing that I'll give Gene Hackman's Lex slack for is, even though it's not my Lex, it was the Lex of the time, because that's how Lex was in the comics. He wasn't this three-dimensional, multi-layered character. He was basically, you know, just an evil scientist how to rule the world and stuff like that.
And to be fair, I don't hate Gene Hackman's Lex, because I find him hilarious, but it's not, it's like, I find him hilarious, but to me it's like he's playing a different character. It's like it's like the performance, it cracks me up, but it's to me it's like, okay, but it's just somebody else. It's not actually Lex Luthor, it's just this other guy who's hilarious.
Yeah. But, so, shall we talk about Memoria now?
Yes, let's. I know we're all dying to talk about it. Let's go for it. Let's dig into it.
Yeah.
The greatest Lex Lionel scene in the entire show. Okay, we just got to start with that, because I was talking to you guys on Twitter. I think I was talking to Ricky. I don't know if you were in this conversation, Adam, but I was talking to Ricky about how I thought that was the greatest Lionel scene in the whole show. Is the scene at the end in Lionel's office, guys, when basically Lex reveals, he says, I didn't kill Julian. And Lionel's talking about, he's like, no, I saw you, Lex, I saw you. And then Lex explains the whole thing about how it was really Lillian who killed him. And when he explains to why he didn't, because Lionel knew that Lionel would have cast her out, and that she would have been his line about, I mean, Lex Michael kills it in this scene. Mm-hmm. He has that line about he would have been the lamb to the slaughter, and he's so intense about it. And then once when you see John Glover's face when Lionel comes to the realization of what's happening here, and he's stuttering. And this is what I love about it. You never see Lionel completely uncomposed like this.
Yeah.
Nothing phases him like this until this scene. And it's like, because he realizes what could have happened, and he's stuttering. Things could have been so different. And then Lex's line, "Yes, Dad, you might have actually loved me." And then Lionel tries to Lionel knows it's true, and he's trying to think of a defense for himself, like, because he knows it's true. And then Lex just shuts him up. He's like, "No, no." And then he just, oh my god, and the music in that scene, oh my goodness, everything about that scene, the way they look at each other, they it's so intense. It is, that scene is a masterpiece.
Yeah, it's
unbelievable.
Yeah, it's, I think Memoria is my favorite episode of season 3, and it, when I did a top 25 episode list for Flickering Myth a couple years ago for the 15th anniversary of Smallville, I forget what placing it was, but it rated pretty high. I think it was in like my top 5 or top 10 at least. But like, this episode is just so powerful for Lex. Like, I love stories that deconstruct the villain. And this episode was a twofer because it deconstructed Lex and Lionel to an extent, and really showed just how messed up that family was. Like, it's so great. And yeah, you're right. Like, my favorite Lex Lionel scene might be their final one in season 7, Descent.
Right before Lex kills him.
Yeah, that might be my favorite Lionel and Lex scene, but this one is definitely up there as well.
I do think this one's better, but I wouldn't argue you too hard because that scene's phenomenal too. So I won't argue you too hard there, but I do think the one in Memoria is better. And for me, Memoria is my third favorite episode of season 3, but it ranks, it is in my top 20 as well. It ranks number 15 for me in my top 20. So just thought I'd throw that out there.
And it's also got one of my favorite Smallville scenes in general, like the very end of it with Clark and Martha, where,
which comes right after that scene.
So it's like a 1-2 punch of like this scene with Lionel and Lex, and then the next scene with Clark and Martha, where he reveals like, oh, Laura was my biological mother's name. And then he's like, I always thought that, you know, my parents must have been monsters because of Jor-El, but her only fear was she was afraid no one would love me.
Yeah.
It's like, ah, and then...
Yeah, I mean, and it's a brilliant contrast to the scene between Lex and Lionel.
Yeah, exactly.
Lionel didn't love Lex, and then you see that contrast there.
Yeah, and then Martha's line of like, believe me, a mother's love never dies, and like, so good.
And it was his first word when she reveals to Clark that Laura was his first word too.
I do kind of wonder how that fact never came up. just imagining throughout his childhood or whatever, like, what was my first word? And you know, it was Laura. We don't know what it means, but that aside, I do love that reveal that he did remember her name, or like her in some shape or form, and now there's that connection now, and like even the look on Tom Welling's face when Martha just says that to him that Laura was your first word, the look on Tom Welling's face, like, you see the impact of that for Clark, knowing that he didn't totally forget about her. Like, it's definitely...
Give it up for Tom Welling again, man.
It's definitely one of the most powerful scenes in the series.
And I mean, back-to-back those scenes like that, that's the incredible thing. That episode ends with two scenes that are so powerful like that, because they're literally back-to-back. And the other thing I'll point about that last scene, though, is, again, another example of Smallville's amazing music choice, My Immortal by Evanescence playing in that scene, which is just, it's so great. I love that song. And it was in Daredevil, too, throwing it out there, but very underrated movie.
Daredevil did it first.
Well, Oh, yeah, I guess it was, because this episode would have been 2004, because it was the latter half of season three. So, yeah, it's slightly before Daredevil. But great song.
But just to echo what you guys were saying, I mean, the cool thing about, you know, what you see with Lionel and Lex, and then what you see with Martha and Clark, the episode goes from really disturbing, like, you know, those flashback scenes where when you realize that it was Lex's mom that killed Julian. That was eerie. That was very disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this uplifting, warm moment between Clark and Martha. The two contrasts are just, you know, emotionally unbelievable. And if those two aspects of this episode don't get you feeling something on an emotional level, there may be something wrong with you. It was just phenomenal.
And you brought up the flashbacks, Adam, too. Those were amazing too. And again, another example of how this season really was very serialized, because we saw the thing in Shattered where Lex was having the visions of Julian, and then we see it here too with him at Excelsior, and he's up there on the roof.
And there's even the flashback to was it in Memoria or was it in an earlier episode? It may have been in Memoria. To the birthday, Lex's birthday.
Yeah, that's this episode. Yeah, that's Memoria. Yeah. And I love that scene too, because the way that John Glover plays it, it's like you can almost see like the kind of good qualities in Lionel as a father figure.
He's being loving to his.
Yeah, but then it is just another level, another layer of Lionel's manipulation, I guess. But you still get the sense that even then, like he does love Lex and like wants the best for him.
Yeah.
Those scenes between Lionel.
It gives you the origin of the lead box, right? Like it shows you. Yeah.
Those scenes between Lionel and Lillian too, when he's telling her it's unnatural for a mother not to want to bond with her son, and those scenes, and then you see it sort of too. You see basically at the end of the episode, you see how basically Lionel, the scene between Lex and Lionel at the end, where Lex talks about how Lillian did love Julian so much that, and I love this line too. I forgot to mention in our feed, this is why I'm bringing it up again, where Lex is telling Lionel, he's like, yes, she loved Lionel defends Lillian. He's like, no, she couldn't have done that. She loved Julian. And Lex responds, yes, she loved him so much she couldn't have bared the thought of subjecting him to your version of parenthood or whatever he said. That's not the exact line. But, yeah, it's just the dysfunction of the Luther family that you see in this episode. It's fascinating. And just there's so much psychologically going on there that's just it's really – really interesting to look at. I mean, and those scenes between, I mean, the flashback scenes, I love the way they're shot too, all sort of like muted colors, and it's really creepy. And oh man, the other thing I'll point out about this episode is I brought this up when we talked about the episode Ryan in our season two retrospective. Dr. Garner is one of the most underrated Smallville villains. I talked about it before. I just want to punch him in the face every time he's on screen. Like,
and that's the mark of a good villain. Yeah.
He's pretty good in this episode. It's a shame. It's a shame he doesn't come back after this.
And it's just like to me, the whole, you know, this episode really sort of brings to a head everything that's been going on with Lex and Lionel this whole season. And you really get a sense of, okay, now I understand what would drive, like, after watching this season, what would drive Lex to actively agree to work with the FBI to bring down his father. And now we got to experience throughout the season what would drive Lex to that point. And so I thought, to me, that was, you know, and then when you finally see when they arrest. It was just before the finale, I think it was.
Yeah.
Where they arrest Lionel. And then there was a quote, something where he compares him to Judas.
He says when he's being taken away, he says, careful, Judas hung himself with his own rope.
So, I mean, all that dialogue, just...
I, there, all the mythology that they always talk about, that Lionel sort of instilled in Lex, all of that that they're always, that he's always talking about. And we see it in this episode too, in the flashback, when he tells him, when he gives him that box and he's talking about the history of it or whatever.
Yeah. And
the line at the end of this episode is, that I also wanted to point out, is it comes right before that scene between Lex and Lionel that I love so much, is the scene between Clark and Lex. And Clark has that, it basically instigates the flashback that Lex has to his mother killing Julian. And it's when basically Clark says to him, "Why does your father hate you so much?"
Yeah.
And I just thought that line was so interesting. Like, that's so powerful and so, I mean, this episode, what it does with Lex Luthor, and I mean, it literally is incredible. It's just, it's amazing.
And I think we should, to be fair, we got, especially in these Lex Lionel centric episodes.
Yeah,
you gotta give credit to the music, because the and I mean the score, not the pop music that's
thrown. Well, I pointed it out in that Lex Lionel scene.
These moments is just like, mm-hmm. you know, music has such an effect on emotion in film and television, and these episodes are an example of that.
People always credit. This is something, you know what? This is a perfect time for me to bring this up. People give so much credit to the Smallville music, and rightfully so, because I mean, I agree that in terms of the, you know, the pop music and everything, and they're right to do so. I mean, I love the music of Smallville. I have a whole Smallville playlist on my phone that I listen to all the time.
Again, nobody's shocked by this. I don't.
they're right to credit that, and people always credit, specifically what I was thinking about recently, is how much people give credit to the Smallville intro with Save Me. And again, they're right to do so. I love it. I absolutely adore that intro. It's amazing. But what I would also point out is, as you were pointing out, the musical score is amazing in Smallville. First, Mark Snow, and then later Louis Feber, who did it. Both of them did such amazing work on the scores. I pointed out in this episode that scene between Lex and Lionel, the music in that scene, but also the music in their not in Lex and Lionel's final scene in Descent, although I think that was pretty good too, but the music in Clark and Lionel's final scene, I always talk about, I mean, I know you brought up, Ricky, how much you love the Lex and Lionel scene in Descent, and I'm sure the music was good, but again, I can't remember the music in that scene, but I always bring up my favorite scene in Descent, and we'll talk about it when we get to season 7, but is the final scene between Clark and Lex at the graveyard. And that's a scene where there's no dialogue between the two of them, but the music in that scene is incredible and just makes it so powerful. And what I'm getting at with all of this is that because people give so much credit to the Smallville intro with Save Me, what I wish people would give more credit to is the end credits music in Smallville. This is something that Adam and I talked about recently off mic. And it's so amazing, particularly, I wish they hadn't changed it. I really do, because the first two seasons are the best. I love the music at the end of the first two seasons of Smallville that I forgot to bring up, actually, on our first two season retrospectives. They changed it in season 3, then they changed it 2 more times after that. I love all of the versions of it, but especially the best one was in season 1 and season 2. But I think they all deserve to be to get credit, because it's amazing music.
Yeah. Just before... I know we're keeping you longer than we wanted to. We said we would. Not I wanted to. We said we would, because we could talk for hours, but more longer. I'll just run down the list of episodes that I wasn't fond of, and I'm sure Jordan is gonna say why he is, and then we'll do a rating so that we can let you be on your way. But some of the episodes that I wasn't fond of was, obviously, Velocity, because I thought it was just fast and
Furious
kryptonite.
Yeah, that's my thing too. That, like, because Fast and the Furious, I think the second movie was just coming out around that point, so they tried to kind of hop on the bandwagon of Fast and Furious's popularity. So, but I also don't like it just because it comes out so out of the blue that, like, oh, Pete's now a drag racer.
Yeah. The only thing I do, and I will give it credit for, is again showing the sort of the burden of knowing Clark's secret, and in some cases what it would cause Pete to do to get Clark to try and help him out of a jam. So there's the positives and the negatives of Pete knowing, right? So it does show.
Yeah, that.
The crux of the majority of the episode I could stand.
That's what I love. I love Velocity because that's what I love about it is it's this episode that really explores Clark and Pete's friendship in the fact that Pete is, I mean, it's something that I talked about, what episode was that we were talking about, where we sort of saw Pete dealing with living with knowing Clark's secret, and here we see sort of Pete living under Clark's shadow, and again, knowing, you know, making a poor choice because he knows Clark's secret, and sort of getting him to wanting, basically taking advantage of that, and wanting Clark to steal the car for him from Lex, or really just wanted him to get the money somehow, but then that's how Clark does it. But Pete is basically, and he said at the end of the episode, "I'm sorry for disrespecting knowing your secret like that, and I won't do it again." But it's like, it's this episode where you really see how Pete struggles sometimes with knowing Clark's secret and with living under his shadow, the shadow of somebody that.
I just ultimately wish it was like, you know, surrounded by better content.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. It's
I get what you're saying, Jordan. It's just the content around it that kind of.
Yeah.
You see, it's fun though. I think it's fun to get I don't think it's any more out there than some of the, you know, meteor freaks that we get in this. I mean, it's kryptonite powered cars.
And that's cool that you like it. It's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah. It's one thing that, like, even though I do sort of like the examination of Clark and Pete's friendship, that's another thing that kind of came out of the blue for me, that there was no sort of buildup, I guess, of that, because like the last major Pete episode was Whisper, and we didn't really get a hint that anything really rocky was happening between them or whatever, and then it just seemed kind of out of the blue of like, I'm doing this drag racing because I'm tired of living in your shadow and stuff. That aspect of Pete just kind of showed up when show never really hinted at that before.
I think he didn't want to make a big deal out of it before, but, you know, he reveals to Clark. I think he even says it in the episode, you know, Clark even tells him in this episode, he's like, "I didn't know you felt that way." And Pete's like, "Well, you know,
neither did the audience. That's the point we're trying to get at." Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, though. Pete was keeping it bottled up.
But they could have showed little bits of it to emphasize it and then fully bore it out in the episode. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They could have peppered it.
I see what you're saying.
That's the issue.
Yeah.
The other two episodes that really, like, there's three episodes that really bug me that I wish weren't part of the season. And that are the two Emily Dinsmore episodes, because I thought they were redundant.
There's only one in this season.
No, isn't there?
Yeah, no, the first Emily Dinsmore was season two. This one's a sequel.
So this one was redundant. It's like, let's revisit this, but she's older. It's like, I could have done without that.
I enjoyed it because I loved that.
You enjoyed it because it was centered around Lana.
Yeah, I think they just wanted to tie that plot thread up before Lionel got sent to jail, since she was kind of still out there. I think that's just why it was. I kind of like that episode, but I also am not a huge fan of it.
You see what I'm saying?
Redundant, right? Because it's kind of basically the same
episode
plot. Like you said, Emily is just older. Like, she still wants to hang out with Lana. That's the one constant there. The only difference is she's older now.
Yeah, and the other one that I really just irritated me was Resurrection. That was
I love the suspense of that episode. Like, the suspense of him with the bomb in the hospital. I mean, I just found that episode really...
But again, you could do a bomb scene without having to... And I'm surprised you enjoy it because you hate everything about Resurrection. So I'm surprised
Well, here's the thing, though. Here's why I don't hate it here, because you obviously see it doesn't work here, is the thing.
Okay, fair enough. All right.
It's not successful Resurrection. Yeah. It's attempt at Resurrection, and it doesn't go properly.
Fair enough. So. But it definitely wasn't one of my favorites. Are there any you want to mention before we sort of, you know, close things off and give our rating? Ricky, the ones that you don't like and the ones that...
No, I'd say Velocity, like we've talked about that. That's the major one that I don't really like. Magnetic, I don't care too much for either. Yeah, just because Magnetic is another story of, like, you know, a meteor infected person harboring a secret crush on Lana who takes it too far. It's like, how many times have we seen that?
To me, there's a charm to that, though, because it's so classic Smallville that's what I love about it. It feels so classic Smallville.
Like, yeah, yeah.
I
get that.
They could have thrown it in the second season or first season.
Yeah. It's just
I love that we still get episodes like that, even as the show progresses, that we still get every once in a while a really classic season one episode.
It's just that the way that story played out, like, it wasn't really interesting to me. And, like, it's just all of a sudden, like, whereas the other guys, like, when you could understand and when they were already kind of bad before they got powers and just getting powers made them worse.
Yeah.
This guy, like, just does a complete 180 because he seems like a pretty nice guy at first. And then it's just, he does a complete 180 and he's like, oh no, I'm totally going to, I guess for all intents and purposes, I'm going to totally mind rape Lana and make her fall in love with me. So,
that's a good point.
It's an example of somebody who their power gets to their head, and it sort of is a contrast to Clark, where he's got all these powers and he does the right thing, and this is somebody who gets these powers and just makes bad choices with them, and, you know, and uses them in irresponsible ways.
Yeah, I get that. The only problem is we've seen an episode like that before in the earlier seasons. Like, the same point was made, so they're just redoing it with a different dressing, right? So. But the only other thing that I think we forgot that I do want to bring up is the character of Alicia Baker and the idea that Clark thinks he's found somebody that he can open up with and all that. And then you see the pitfalls of that. I thought that character was interesting. And
She's a great tragic character.
Yeah, I did really kind of like Obsession. And, like, I also like the fact that in season four we get, like, two, like, continuing episodes of it when she comes back.
Yeah.
So, I do like Obsession, and that character was pretty interesting. And then it's like a flip from the, like I just mentioned, Magnetic. Oh, like, yeah, we see this story again. I like the flip of that, where it's now Clark who has the obsessed person chasing
and stuff. And it shows why he doesn't like the dangers of opening up about his powers to people, right? And the effects.
Yeah, exactly. It shows the bad side of, like, of revealing his secret.
I think that she's such a her story and her as a character is just it's such a tragic character. She can never catch a break, and it's just, it also shows how just because Clark has found somebody to be with that has powers like him and that he can be open with, that doesn't mean everything's going to go swimmingly. I'm with you there. I'll also point out in Delete we get Toy Man's first appearance on the show, even though it's not actually Toy Man, because Chris Gauthier, who plays Toy Man later on, he has a tiny role in that episode as that guy in the tech
office. The tech guy.
Hereafter, I just wanted to ask you guys. I love that episode. I think it's so cool. Jordan Cross is power. First of all, I like that his name is Jordan, because my name is Jordan. Does he look like the Ashmore brothers to you? Because he looks so much
like... there's a similarity there. I will say that,
He looks so much like them.
Have you seen where he touches Clark and you see the cape going on?
Yeah, that just reminded me that's the first episode we see cape action in this entire series.
That's true.
Which is, when I first watched that was pretty awesome, seeing even just a hint of the cape and the sigil on the back. Like, it's like, okay, yeah, that's... That's amazing.
That was cool foreshadowing. It was good that you called that out, Jordan.
Oh, thank you. And then really quickly, I'll mention Covenant, the finale.
We didn't talk about that, but
I just think I think that finale is awesome because it's a much more contained finale than a lot of the Smallville finales. It doesn't feel as big as the other ones. But I think it's so great because it sets up so many big question marks going into season four. You know, Lana leaving for Paris. And Clark discovering that room that Lex has with all
And you see, and you see in that room all the callbacks to preview. Like, he's got that bug, he's got the bullets Clark caught when Lionel was blind. He's got this. It's like
the simulation running. I think that I always wanted when he has that simulation.
Yeah, he's got this
car.
Yeah. I will say one of the reasons I really like Covenant as a finale is I'm a big fan of The Godfather. I love that movie. So seeing Covenant kind of do a spin on The Godfather's ending, when like spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen The Godfather, but when Michael Corleone exacts his revenge on the other mob families, that plays out pretty much to this of Lionel Luthor being in a situation, and then at the same time he's enacting his vengeance on everybody who's wronged him, and like while getting his head shaven to look like a classic Luthor. So
which was later replicated in Batman v Superman with Lex.
Yeah. So I really like the I like the nod to The Godfather
and the fake Okara too.
And you get it to Mozart music. Like that is awesome as well.
Yes. Adrian Palicki, she was great as the fake out Kara. And again, like I was saying, all the stuff that it sets up for season four, again, you think Chloe and Gabe are dead. And so it's
I will say that that's something I'm a little disappointed in season four undoing, just because when you see this finale, like you see the fire rush and engulf Chloe, like there's no way she could have survived that, like you see it. So it's like season four when they immediately kind of retcon it as like, oh yeah, there was enough time for Lexus security guys to get them underground. It's like, oh
yeah, it's a little far-fetched. Yeah,
it's like, but we saw it, so it undoes it a little bit, but still was pretty shocking to see, and it's still a great moment of like, oh, like did they live, did they die, even though they most definitely died in this scenario. But
it was a great finale.
It's one of my favorite Smallville finales.
But let's wrap things up as we always do with our rating of the season as a whole. So Ricky, you're the guest of honor, so what is your overall rating for Smallville?
I think I'd give it like an 8.5 out of 10, like or do you want a letter grade?
Yeah, give us a letter grade as well, just to offset.
Letter grade like A-. I think it's a pretty strong season with only
a couple of blemishes,
two three episodes I don't care for, but it's a strong season.
Jordan, your final grade?
Yeah, well, I don't think this is going to be a surprise to anybody, but an A+ for me. Yeah. I think this is phenomenal.
Oh, cool. And I'll echo Ricky's sentiments and say A-. It was a really good season. A couple of blemishes, like I said, but nothing that would had me rolling my eyes or groaning in pain for too long. So that it was another good installment. I won't have as much positivity towards the next season, so expect some.
I'll
try to make up for that with my positivity.
Expect some long pent up wrath to be extolled on that episode. But
I adore season four.
Of course you do. But before we wrap up, as always, we want to mention that we are part of the Batman Podcast Network, and there was no Batman. Well, there was some Batman talk earlier, but the crux of the podcast was Smallville. So, but if you want other Batman-related podcasts, go to the Batman Podcast Network, and you can find a bunch of great podcasts over there. If you want to get in touch with any of us, let's do the social media plugs. Ricky, if people want to talk to you on social media, where do they do that?
They can find me at RichardChurch16. And as I mentioned, and you guys mentioned earlier, I've done a ton of stuff for Batman on Film with Gotham reviews and opinions pieces, and appeared on a few podcasts. And then you can find my regular writings over at Flickering Myth, where I review movies and follow movie news and stuff like that.
Sweet. Jordan, where can we talk to you about the Bad Cat Wedding, which that's all of my
Oh, absolutely, because I'm always on Twitter and talking about that. So I'm so excited for that. I just got my save the date, my hard copy this past week. So I framed it. Mm-hmm. It's big shout out to Tim from the Batman Universe Batfans podcast for letting me know that retailers finally had them. Because I got mine. I got the last one. Actually, that my local comic shop had, so I was very, very excited about that. So I am so excited about the Batcat Wedding, of course. You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at BatFanJordanV. And I also want to solicit some iTunes reviews, so if you like what you're hearing from us, or if you don't, well, either way, it would help us out if we heard from you in the form of an iTunes review. Thank you.
And if you want to talk to me about why Jordan's so obsessed with this stuff, like Klana and Batcat stuff, and you want to try and diagnose him, we can do that together at Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter. Until next time, thank you, Ricky, for coming on. This was fun.
Thanks, guys, for having me on.
Nice, it was a lot of fun. Canadian as well.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we should get a beer sometime soon, for sure.
Yes, we've been talking off podcast about maybe getting together for a screening of Aquaman when it comes about.
Yes, that'd be cool.
In December,
for
so
sure.
We may set that up. And again, thanks for coming on. Hopefully we'll have you back soon.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Until next time, I hope everyone has a great weekend and a great week ahead. So long, everybody.
Bye-bye.
See ya.